Welcome to the March 20th, 2003 House Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources. Welcome to all of you. We have a one item on the agenda, and it is, of course, is the reason that we have a full hearing room here and a partially full hearing room in an adjoining room. Before we get started, take notice of the witness registration sheet. This only applies to you if you are a public official or a lobbyist. There are two laws that govern your testimony, that it has to be truthful and accurate, and by signing this sheet you acknowledge that. If you are a member of the public, and it appears most of you are, we want this law does not apply to you. However, we still want your testimony to be truthful and accurate, as it quite often is utilized in court cases later to establish legislative intent. So it is important. And thank you again for coming. We have today House Bill 2436. And Ray, you want to tell us what this bill does?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2436 repeals laws prohibiting the use of bait to attract or take black bears or use dogs to hunt or pursue black bears or cougars.
Yeah, why don't you?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, ballot measure 18, Oregon Laws 1995, Chapter 4, was proposed by initiative petition, was enacted by a vote of 629,527 to 586,026 at the regular general election held on November 8, 1994. By proclamation by the governor, dated December 7, 1994, the act was declared to have received an affirmative majority of the total number of votes cast thereon, and to be in full force and effect as provided in Section 1, Article 4, Oregon Constitution on December 8, 1994. Ballot Measure 18 specified exceptions to the bait prohibition, established penalties for violation of the law, and defined bait for purposes of the act. Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you, Ray. Before we get started, a couple of quick ground rules. We have lots of folks here who are signed up to testify today, and I want to do my very best to hear from each and every one of you, and if they will allow us in this room to continue, if we go over the 3 o'clock hour, I'll be happy to stay. Some of the other members of this committee may not be able to. Chances are, however, that we're going to, it is Chair's intention to move this bill forward from this committee today. So if we go over, it will only be by a very few minutes. So if you have testimony that someone else has basically made your point, please come forward, tell us it in abbreviated form, and we'll move forward from there. The chair has, typically it is our custom to recognize members of the legislative body that are here to testify, and we're going to do that today. We're going to start with Senator Fisher before we open with the official testimony from the proponents of the bill. Senator, come here, please. Welcome. We're opening the public hearing on House Bill 2436. Welcome, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Senator Bill Fisher from Roseburg and Douglas County, Curry County, Coos County, parts of Josephine and Jackson County. I'm going to be very brief. I'm in full support of this bill. I was a chair of the Subcommittee on Ag and Natural Resources in 1995 when we did everything we could to try to moderate and ameliorate the effects of the ban on bear hunting and cougar hunting. And obviously we're not successful. Nothing has happened in the meantime to make me feel that we don't need to progress in this direction. Contrary to that, several things have happened. The increasing sighting of cougars in populated areas and the increasing human contact between bears and cougars just make it that much more necessary, I feel, to try to moderate the effects of that particular initiative. So I want to give it my full support, and I thank you for an opportunity to come here and testify.
Thank you, Senator. Members, questions? Hearing none, thank you very much, Senator.
Appreciate it.
Also, to members of the public who are not used to testifying, when you come forward, it is our tradition, and actually it is necessary for the public record, that when you start to speak, that you identify who you are. You don't have to tell us where you're from, but just identify what your name is. That's very important because we are being taped. And are we on the Internet today?
Yes, Mr. Chair, we are live okay. on the World Wide Web.
So we're going worldwide with our broadcast today. All right. Thank you very much. Chair, I'd like to call Jared Broadfoot forward, please. Wayne, did you still want to wait until after Jared?
I can come up with Jared and let him.
Okay, why don't you? Let's come up together.
If you want me to get this power away.
Just wait. Welcome to you both.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jared Broadfoot. I'm with PacWest Communications. I'm here today representing all of the Oregon chapters of Safari Club International and as a member of Oregonians for Responsible Wildlife Management. Set up the discussion today, I would like to run you through the process that we have undertaken over the past year to look into this issue and bring it before you today. If you look in your blue packets that I have provided for you on the left-hand side, second page, that is where I'll begin my testimony. In June of last year, 2002, we conducted a statewide poll. We went to 400 people statewide, and of those people, they had voted in 2 to 4 of the last elections. And we asked some questions regarding the use of dogs and bait for the management of bear and cougar populations. We asked questions on public safety and regulated hunting. As you can see, 78% of the people that we polled support regulated hunting in this state. Those numbers have stayed around the 75 to 80 percentile for the past about 4 years in the polling that we have conducted. Conversely, if you look at the bottom of the page, one of the questions we asked was, do you approve or disapprove of the unregulated hunting of bears and cougars? 84% of the people that we surveyed, that we polled, disapproved of the unregulated hunting of bears and cougars. That tells us very clearly that the citizens of this state want the Department of Fish and Wildlife to effectively manage bear and cougar populations with the use of dogs and bait. How we get to that, 69% of the people that we polled support the use of dogs for the hunting of cougars and bears that are a threat to people, farm animals, forest crops, and for wildlife management purposes, and also 61% support the use of bait. These numbers spoke very clearly to us, and that is what prompted us to come to you and to bring this before this body, and we thank the committee for sponsoring this bill as a committee bill. Also, we asked what the concern was for sightings of bears and cougars in suburban neighborhoods. We asked if people felt it was the responsibility of the Department of Fish and Wildlife to manage all wildlife for optimum recreational use and aesthetic value, and 64% said yes. Also, we asked if the Department of Fish and Wildlife was trustworthy to manage wildlife, and specifically bear and cougar populations, and 80% said yes. Do we feel that bear and cougar populations have been managed since 1994? The answer is absolutely not. We have not had management of bear or cougar populations since 1994, and that is the reason we are here today. The Department of Fish and Wildlife over the past years has stated that the problem will get nothing but worse. They receive over 1,600 public safety complaints per year for bear and cougar complaints. In some quotes, the department has been quoted as saying that it has been a growing problem for years. Bears in the area are becoming habituated to humans and are boldly raiding trash cans, tents, and tables at campgrounds for food. That comes from Chip Dale from the Department of Fish and Wildlife. Cougars are learning to grow up killing livestock and pets and teaching young to do that. Another Department of Fish and Wildlife biologist from Ashland. You would hope that when confronted, their normal behavior is to take off and disappear. When they hang around like that, it's an accident waiting to happen. Claire Kunkel of Department of Fish and Wildlife. It is an accident waiting to happen, members of the committee, and that is why we're here. If we continue on through the packet, you will see a public safety piece. The biggest concern that we have is if we do not pass this bill, a child will eventually be attacked and killed. We have had other states who have passed similar bans on the management of bear and cougar populations, and we have seen people attacked. In the audience today, you will have an individual speak to you that almost had her children attacked by a cougar in Oregon just last Thanksgiving. You will also hear testimony from an individual who had his grandson mauled by a cougar in Northeast Oregon, yes, or Northeast Washington. Washington passed this very ban as well. Our message is very clear. If we don't do something about this, a child will eventually be attacked and killed. In 2002, 38 black bears had to be killed because they posed a serious threat to human safety. 177 black bears had to be killed because they were causing damage. Bears causing damage are also a public safety threat. They cause damage to houses, to freezers. They break into houses to get at the freezers. What will happen if your child is out playing in the backyard and a cougar or bear decides to nab it? That's the question we've come to you with today, is what will this state do and what will this body do if that happens? The next piece is wildlife management. We have a severe problem with the management of elk and deer populations because of the mismanagement of bear and cougar populations over the past 8 years. We have seen tremendously low elk recruitment and fawn recruitment rates for our elk and deer populations. Specifically, in a study that is being conducted in Northeast Oregon, almost 90% of elk calf mortality comes from bears and cougars. 66% of Oregonians are concerned that the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife cannot properly manage bear and cougar populations without the use of dogs and bait. 64 harvest quotas for cougars set by the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife Commission have only been met once in the past 8 years. Once in the past 8 years, we have managed to harvest the number of cougars that it takes to effectively manage the population of cougars. A very low percentage of the animals taken by sport hunters are actually sport take. A lot of the situations that have come through are hunters out hunting elk or deer who have been stalked and almost attacked by bears or cougars, and that is when they take these animals. It is almost impossible to go out into the field and effectively harvest a bear or a cougar for management purposes without the aid of dogs and bait, the most effective wildlife management tool available. The third part that I would like to touch on is the economic consequences of the 1994 initiative. Since that time, we have seen millions upon millions of dollars of damage to forest crops and other livestock from bears and from cougars, mostly bears. The other economic consequences this state has suffered due to the dramatic decrease in elk and deer tag numbers, a significant loss, millions of dollars to local communities because the people that normally go to those communities to hunt and purchase elk tags cannot purchase elk tags in those areas anymore. For instance, Wallowa County has had about an 87% drop in their elk tag numbers. The next piece that I would like to address is our question and answer. Now, you are going to hear testimony today from animal rights extremists who were the ones that initially put this on the ballot and passed it. And I would like to give you a little background of how that came about. In 1993, Wayne Pacelli, who is now the executive vice president of the Humane Society of the United States, approached the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife Commission requesting that bear and cougar hunting be shut down. That request was denied, and in 1994, Oregon voters were duped into passing the ban on bear and cougar management. You may ask, if we voted on this before, why should we deal with this again? Our message is clear. We have a tremendous public safety problem, and that when that initiative went through, people were duped into passing it. No one ever considered the fact that we would have this tremendous public safety, wildlife management, and economic problem in this state today. Why are there nearly four times as many cougars killed this past year than in 1994? Due to the tremendous increase in bear and cougar populations, these dangerous predators continue to roam our neighborhoods and communities in search of their next meal. Families are forced to protect their children, pets, and property by killing bears and cougars that threaten their lives. The unintended and adverse consequences of this management ban have been clear. You have seen them. You've seen them in the papers. If you look in your packet on the right-hand side, you will get a little glimpse into the damage that bears and cougars cause by attacking livestock and humans. You will also turn to the next page and see just a piece of the newspaper articles that for the last 3 years and one from 1994. You've also been handed out to you today clippings from the past 4 years that we have turned in every time we have come before this body and asked for relief from dangerous predators. We've handed out a lot of material, and you guys have a lot of material to review. We ask that you think about this seriously. You look in the room today, look at the people who have come here, listen to their testimony, and realize that bears and cougars pose a serious threat to human safety, to wildlife management, and the economic consequences have been grave to this state. We also ask that you consider what the public wants. The public has stated through our poll and through their presence here today that they do not want the ban on management ban on bear and cougar populations anymore. They want protected from dangerous predators, and they want bear and cougar populations managed effectively through the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. I thank you for your time, and I will be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Jared. Members, questions? Well, I have a couple, Jared.
Thank you.
In your testimony, in the segment on restoring wildlife management,
yes,
your first bullet point says nearly 90% of elk calf mortality. Where do you get that number from?
The number that where we got that was from the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, from their study area, the earliest results from the predation and nutrition study in Northeast Oregon.
Okay. Next question is on your other piece here that's entitled Bears and Cougars Are Making Their Presence Known. Your first bullet point there says if passage this bill basically will decrease over $11 million in crop and wildlife damage or livestock damage. Where do you get those figures from?
The $11 million is actually bear predation, only bear bear damage, and that's only for Western Oregon.
And so that come from where?
I received those figures from the Oregon Farm Bureau, I think is where we got those figures, from their damage report.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Krieger, welcome.
Hello, good afternoon.
For the record,
Chair Krupp, committee members, for the record, I am Wayne Krieger, district rep from State 1, which is the Curry County, about 80% of Coos, and the Western Douglas. I'm here today to support this bill. It's long overdue. As most of you know, I spent 28 years with the Oregon State Police Game Enforcement Division, being from 1964 to 1991. During those years, I traveled approximately 30,000 miles annually in Coos and Curry counties. Much of it was on forest regions. This was also the time of large timber extractions on both the federal and private land. But it was not until 1989 that I first observed and understood that Douglas fir and white fir were being peeled and killed by black bears. This was a concern of mine at the time because I had just purchased 310 acres in Curry County and had begun to manage that land for timber production and for fish and wildlife habitat and clean air and water. That was our objective. We first planted trees on our property in 1980. Having planted 67,000 plus up to this time, mostly Doug fir, white fir, spruce, and redwood. We were recognized for our efforts in stewardship approach to our forest management by being named the National Outstanding Tree Farmers of the Year for the entire United States, being selected number one out of 73,000. I first actually observed bear damage on our property in 1990, and by 1995 it had become severe. At that time, I was sitting on the Oregon Board of Forestry and had found that the state forest lands were experiencing heavy losses in stands that were 10 to 20 years old in the Clatsop and Tillamook State Forest that had already been thinned. There were stands that had up to 40% kill. On the Silver Creek area off of the Rogue River near Gold Beach on BLM land, 20-year-old stands had suffered up to 70% kill, and those were stands that had already been pre-commercial thinned. Between 1994 and 2000, just on my 310 acres, of which 127 only actually had been reforested and replanted. I had experienced a potential harvest loss of $300,000, and I did have Representative Knope come down and walk it with me. He can verify that. These were trees that were 10 to 20 years old that we had planted. It was devastating. Trees in riparian zones were managed for salmon habitat were being killed, robbing the stream of shade. Most peeling took place from late April to July as the sap rose up the trees. In 1999, I found that they'd been killing nearly all of the redwood and that they were actually peeling the coastal white fir in the fall when the sap went down. South Coast Lumber, out of Brookings, had similar counts to mine on a lot of their land. The fact is they've got 50,000 acres, and if you can take a look what that would mean, it's way into the millions of dollars in that one land ownership. The Forest Service has actually approached the government trapper wanting to have them do some work on the Forest Service land, but the process of getting able to get that done and all the EA-type issues they have to deal with, they've backed away from it. They're just allowing the trees to be killed. With the loss of baiting and hunting with our bear population grew and predation increased. Besides trees, fir trees, orchards, plastic water lines, beehives, all became targets for bears. Though expensive, feeding programs were initiated to alleviate the predation, but proved to be a failure. The bears had greater success in reproduction, higher cub survival, and consequently ended up with more bears the next year. In reference to the Oregon Department of Forestry, and the final report of 2000 tree mortality report and ground verification project. The report states that 250,470 trees were damaged or killed by bears. Also note this is only from the surveyed area. There is a considerable area in Coos and Curry counties, and I believe that was not surveyed. Due to the severe predation in these two counties, the actual mortality in Oregon is much higher than stated in the Oregon Department of Forestry 2000 tree mortality report. These two counties, in fact, have some of the highest populations of both black bears and cougar. Also in June and July, flights are too early as the bears peel trees late and they have not turned red and therefore they would not be counted during that year. So they've got quite a few trees that are actually being missed. And there is no question that bears cost Oregon millions of dollars a year. It is a fact the responsibility of government to control bears. They own the land, the federal land. We own our private land, and we contribute to the tax base. They are, in fact, damaging private property. The losses transcend into lost family wage jobs, logging, trucking, mill, supporting business, and a loss of tax revenues for our state and most especially our schools. During the 2001 general legislative session, I was able to have $75,000 put in the Oregon Department of Agricultural budget for a bear predation economic loss study. With the state's economic situation, it was later taken out of the budget. If this study had been taken place, I believe we would have all been totally unprepared and stunned at the loss due to predation by bears. The environmental community has argued about a $1 million figure. I think in this case I would have to say it only shows their ignorance and lack of on-the-ground experience. If you were to take a look at the figures that come from the Department of Forestry, that is verified, you're talking at $75 million a year alone just on bear predation on timber, not counting anything else.
Excuse me, Wayne, is that on state timberlands alone?
That's all timberlands.
That's all timber,
on
private,
on
state,
the coast,
federal?
They fly the coast, and that's private, industrial, non-industrial, and then the Forest Service ground.
Okay.
There are parts of the Forest Service ground they don't survey, though. Considerable.
And Wayne, that's $75 million of estimated damage from what period to what period?
Annually.
Well, annually.
Annually. They don't kill once and go home. They're there every year. They eat every day, so to speak. Just a moment about cougars. I came to my office one day, and my wife had got this picture of this 200-pound cougar that was killed. And right below it, there was a little sign that says, "Here, kitty, kitty." And she's lived in rural Oregon all her life, a farm girl. She thought it was quite humorous. There's also a picture here in the publication that Mr. Broadfoot put out, and you'll notice that there's a dog laying there. This looks like it's about cut in half. That particular cougar that attacked that dog, there's quite a story behind that, because it happened along with six others in 6 weeks in Curry County, where this dog was chained to its doghouse. And 15 minutes before this dog was attacked, there was a six-year-old girl out playing with the dog. She went in to talk to her grandfather when the Curruca started out in the yard, and this is what they ended up with. The dog actually lived. It's amazing. But these animals are right in amongst people. About a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, Senator Mez and I attended a conference that was held near Elkton by USDA and had to do with their predation people from around the state that gather there annually. And we were showing some videos, reconstruction of crime scenes, as I call them, or kills, cougar kills of human beings, the three women specifically, partly eaten body parts, described in detail how these women were killed, how they were attacked. It was very graphic, and it made me realize that even though I've lived and spent my entire career in the brush, logged, been there, walked around at night chasing outlaws, so to speak, it makes you just a little bit more aware that as this population has grown, it is going to start affecting people. At our tree farm, we've killed two cougars in recent years. I would estimate that the deer population on our place is probably down 80% right now. Two cougars have been seen just recently. I haven't seen them, but they were when I wasn't home. And as I said a minute ago, the Curry County trapper trapped six cougar in and near around homes in 6 weeks, a little over a year ago, in Curry County. They're on people's back porch. We have Rose Walker down at Pistol River, killed a cougar on her back porch. I think she was 83 years old when she did that here about 6-8 months ago. We have an incident in Curry County where a cougar went under a house, killed or brought out, we don't know when it was killed, an 80-pound German Shepherd and jumped over the fence with it. These animals are tremendously strong. You cannot understand. One of the victims that we had pictures about were showing was hit so hard that the victim was knocked clear out of the tennis shoes that she was running in. They were right against close to the road where she was knocked out and still laced. The things that basically that Jared has talked about is true, and I understand that many times we get involved in these type of things, and even the environmental community, I think they mean well. And it becomes an emotional issue. And I think the thing that I would like to say in ending is that the ballot initiative is not the way to manage natural resources. It doesn't matter if it's bear, doesn't matter if it's what it is, fish, if it's our timber industry. You need to have the agencies who have the science to make those type of determinations. That's what we pay them for. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Members, questions? Hearing none, thank you both very much.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, I'm going to push the play button on the video.
Okay, we have a video, and we'll need to dim the lights, please.
Actually, if I could bring Nancy up first so she can introduce herself.
Nancy Denning?
Yeah.
If you'd come forward, please, with your son. Welcome, and you can introduce yourselves as soon as the video's finished playing.
Oh. It was a Sunday morning, and my husband Joe and my oldest son Dusty were gone hunting, and I was home with my other three sons, Jacob, Ray, and Shane, and I was just in the kitchen, and the kids were all playing in the living room, and we have a large dog outside, and he was barking. Dwayne, which is our neighbor, he has a gun, and he said, there's a cougar that ran through our yard. So I went to the front door and was out there talking to him, and he had his rifle, and he said, get your dog in. Your dog was fighting with a cougar. Well, when I came back, the cougar had noticed movement inside the house through the window and just started lunging at the door. I heard a shot, which one guy had thrown a rock at it to get it away from our door. And they took one shot at it, and it just hit it and wounded it, and it ran across the road.
I was gone at the time, and to come home and find out, you know, before I even got into the yard, I was flagged down by the neighbor, you know, to pull into his driveway and see what was going on, and they're telling me that, they just shot this cougar off of our property. Chills run down your spine, the fact that, here my family is, I'm gone and not here to protect them, and there's a cougar sitting literally on our back doorstep and actually lunging at our door trying to get in the house. These are things that just shouldn't be happening.
I've lived here most of my life, and I've never seen a cougar. Certainly not this close. But until something like this happens, you really don't understand. I knew, that people have seen cougars, but when they actually are at your back door, it's a different story. And this is a little too close.
Welcome, Nancy. For the record, state your name, please.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee.
Please speak into the microphone.
Speak the microphone, Governor.
People just won't be able to hear you. I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for letting me come in today. And my name is Nancy Denig. We had an incident that happened, and I just wanted to tell my story and the fact that we were threatened by a wild animal at our own home, that the cougar was jumping at our door. Raymond, this is Raymond Denig. He had opened the door to look outside. He heard our neighbor talking about the cougar running through our yard, so he just went to the back door and looked out, looking towards the barn. And he had happened to turn, this is what he told us, and it was sitting right down in the corner, and he slammed the door and came running back to us. It all happened so fast. It was exciting. But then when it was all over, the cougar lunging at the door, we have a window in our door, it was a small cougar, but yet the paws were huge. The mouth, if it was much bigger, it probably would have came through the door. It was very frightening. And the guys that were outside, said that it lunged at the door multiple times, which we didn't see. We only seen once, and I just got to a different room. The kids could have been playing outside. When this was all over, the aftershock was just devastating of what could have happened. They could have been playing outside. The cougar could have been in our house. When the people that put the previous bill into effect to ban the hunting the wild animals, I don't think anybody intended for a child to be threatened, and I don't think they do. And after this happened, we wanted to do something about this. What can we do? This shouldn't be happening, and so that's why I'm here to talk to you. And I think that something can be done about this. They should be managed. Wild animals should be managed.
Thank you, Nancy. Members, questions? Well, we appreciate you coming over, and thanks for bringing Raymond with you. How's he doing now?
He's almost asleep right now, but he's... I don't think they really understood. He's doing okay. It was scary. He made himself a barricade that night.
Really?
That happened, and built a tent around him and said that the cougars won't get me in here.
So when... Were you there when he opened the door?
I was still at the front door trying to get our dog in.
Okay.
And, our neighbor with the gun had went, he came over wondering if my husband was home, and he wasn't. It was just us. He had went to the field, thinking that's what a wild animal is going to do, is flee, towards the barn or out towards our field. And it just circled around the back door, and he just, curiosity, went to look and see where he was going. And looked out and just happened to look back, and it was in the corner, and he slammed the door and came running back in to tell us that it was there. My first thought was, I've never seen a cougar. One just a few years ago had jumped in front of me in the road. It was a big cougar, and I almost hit it. That was the first cougar I've ever seen, and I wondered what it was at first. And I had shouted out the window that it was back because he was out looking, thinking it had ran off. And I was telling the neighbor that it was by our back door. And that's when it just lunged at the door.
So you witnessed the cat lunging to the door?
Yes, we all did. My other two sons are here that,
I
yes.
See. Okay.
Right, once, well. And they said that it was lunging and multiple times, and the other guy that was outside started throwing rocks at it to get it off our door.
And so the neighbor shot the cat. What happened then?
The one guy without the gun was throwing rocks at it to, you know, it just kept lunging. The kids inside were screaming. And it finally went off the steps and went around the house, and that's when he got the one shot at it. Hmm. And it continued back to where it came from the neighbors. And they followed it over to some trees, and they shot it again.
And then did you notify ODF&W or the sheriff?
They did, yeah.
And did they come out and inspect the animal?
Yeah, somebody came and got it. I don't think they did any tests on it.
Okay.
I don't think so. We even went over and took the kids over. It was laying over there.
Okay. Yes, Representative Smith.
Thank you for making the trip down here. I know it's hard to come down here and testify.
Yeah.
You live in Halfway?
Uh-huh.
Okay. You said you saw one cross the road earlier.
It was a few years ago.
A few years
ago. Maybe in 99.
So you've seen an increase because you said you'd never seen them.
Yeah, I've lived there all, you know, I've grown up, grew up there, and as I was a kid, I played around a lot more, a lot farther away from the house than my kids do out in the country. And this was the first cougar that I had seen. It jumped over the guardrail and just barely missed it, like, you know, kind of like you would miss a deer, but they're fast. Just, and it was big.
Yes, please.
Thank you. Did you report that sighting to ODF?
No, I just told a few people, but I didn't report that.
So the number, the 1,600, there could be many more.
That's what I pointed out to Jared. When I seen that, I said, that's the documented cases.
The people who've actually made the phone calls.
And, you know, it seems after this happened to us, it comes up in conversation all the time. There's a cougar ran. Dogs chased a cougar off away from their property, but then the cougar turned around and chased their dogs back, clear up onto their pickup, and then the cougar left.
Amazing. Mm.
And just before I left on this trip, a gal has a huge 200-pound Rottweiler, and it was missing. You know, when she was first telling me the story, I said, is this a puppy? And she said, no, it's a 200-pound full-grown Rottweiler. And a neighbor just said they seen a huge cougar just walk off of her property, and they were worried about their dog. And after 3 days, he showed up. And she just, nothing was wrong with it, but.
Can I call you?
Yes.
Just a comment. I used to live in Richland.
Really?
Yes, for 10 years, and I never saw a cougar. I moved back. I'm 22 miles from downtown Portland, and I've seen three in the last 6 years.
You've seen them where?
On the road,
yeah.
In the fields.
Yeah, yeah, there's people that have lived there for years, yeah. 50, 60 years old, and they say, I want to see, you know, I've never seen a cougar. But,
thank you so much.
Thank you.
One last question. Was anyone able to determine the age or the health of the animal?
It was a young cougar, 2 years old, and it was sick. It was only 40 pounds. Which he weighs about 50 pounds, but there's no doubt in my mind when I seen that cougar through that window what it could do to a child. And that was a small one.
Okay. Thank you very much. Chair would like to call Daryl, is it Shooty?
Shoot.
Shoot, please come forward, sir, and with your grandson. Oh, and while you're doing it, I'd like to have Representative Greg Smith come forward. And before you get started, Daryl, Representative Smith is going to say a few words. So feel free to sit down anyway, please. Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Welcome, Representative.
Good afternoon, Chair Crump.
Pull the microphone over so we can hear you.
Good afternoon, Chair Crump, members of the committee.
For the record, I'm Oregon State Representative Greg Smith. I have the pleasure of representing District 57, which includes Union, Wallowa, Umatilla, and Moro County. And prior to redistricting, I had the honor of serving Baker, Grant, Moro, Wheeler, Gillum, Sherman, Crook, and Wasco County. And during an interim period during that, I also included Jefferson County. And so I've represented a lot of rural eastern Oregon, and I feel very well prepared to come here today and testify in favor of House Bill 2436. I'm going to keep my comments very brief because I can tell the gentleman sitting to my right probably will have much greater thoughts than I. But I do want to share a quick story with you. 2 years ago, I was out hiking with my oldest son about 25 miles out of Heppner, between Heppner and Spray. And we were just out in the spring walking and hiking, an activity that we do. And at the end of that hike, we got into our rig and we're on our way back. And within about 200 yards of our drive back home, we watched a full-grown cat walk across the road. And I think you're going to hear that message throughout the day. Not run across the road, walk across the road. And obviously, being from rural Oregon, I wanted to see this cat. And so I stopped, initially opened up the door. Cat continued to walk. At that point in time, I realized it probably wasn't that bright to do that, and I got back in my rig. But I want you to know these incidences are occurring, and these are actual live accounts of cougar sightings. Their impact is tremendous, not only on livestock and on our big game, but also on humans. And so, Chair Krupp, I truly admire your leadership in bringing this bill forward, and I just want this committee to know for the record that I truly support House Bill 2436. Thank you for having me here today.
Thank you, Representative. Questions? Thanks, Greg.
Thank you.
Mr. Shute, welcome. And who is it with you today?
This is the boss. This is Jacob Walsh. I'm Darrell Shute.
Thank you.
Jacob's grandfather. That's how I'm known. Jacob is not yet ready to tell his story about being attacked by the cougars. He can't really get through it and contain himself yet, but he did say, as we were talking a few minutes ago, that maybe he'd be able to answer some questions if you have them after we get through. I truly appreciate the opportunity to testify here today. I'm from out of state. We live in northeast Washington, Ferry County. Where the attack occurred is on our family home. We live property adjoining Highway 395. The State Highway Department says there's about 2,000 cars a day going past our property. That's what the count was in 1999, which kind of translates into oftentimes two or three automobiles or trucks every minute. The property where we live was purchased by my parents in 1926. It was from the estate of a man by the name of Jimmy Doyle, and I'm saying that to let you know that we didn't just move in there. One of the things that I often hear is that we're invading cougar property. That's far from being the truth. I'm at the time of the attack, I was 71 years old. I, on this property, when I was younger than Jacob, I was playing on the hillside without my folks. I wouldn't have had any concern anyway, but my folks didn't have any concern. It was just perfectly okay for kids of 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years old. I walked or ran a mile and a half to get to the swimming hole and by myself when I was 5, 6, 7 years old. Mom didn't always know it, I don't suppose, but I'm saying this in preparation to let you know that we aren't new in that area. And this attack occurred in August 24th of 1999, probably the most terrible day of my life. We'd been mowing the lawn. The kids, Jacob and a cousin, had been playing out there. And in the middle of the afternoon, decided to go down to the creek that runs by our property, actually to wash some of the dust off that's where they'd got dirty while they were playing. My daughter Sandy, that's Jacob's mother, and my daughter Vicky had been canning. We're a typical family doing the typical things that you do in a typical place. And as Jacob and his cousin walked down to the creek, suddenly Jacob's cousin began yelling, "Lion, lion, lion!" And she was screaming and running around the deck. And Vicky, my daughter Vicky, thought she was crying wolf. And she went to the window to look out to say something to her. And she looked out and here a cougar was on top of Jacob down by the creek. Jacob was on his back. He was fighting the cougar off with his hands and with his feet. Vicky immediately, and I don't know how she got down there so quickly, ran around, went down to where the cougar was. I had been on the back porch, crossed to the deck, and as I went through the living room, I said, "What in the world's going on?" Because there was screaming, and I thought actually what had happened was that one of the kids had fallen from the swing and broken an arm. That was a thought that went through my mind. And somebody in the living room said, "Cougar." That's all they said, "Cougar." I got to the doorway, and I heard Vicky saying, "Let him go." Well, it came together then. A cougar had Jacob. I had to be there. Ran across the deck. Can you imagine a fat 71-year-old man vaulting over the deck railing? Anyhow, went through the brush, and as I was running, I heard Vicky say again twice, "Let him go, let him go," in her best medical voice. You know how authoritative that you can get if you're in the medical profession or if you're a school teacher. Anyway, when I got down by the creek, and I heard Vicky say the last time, "Let him go," and I walked over there, and Vicky, my daughter, came out holding Jacob in her arms. She said that the cougar, as she came up to the rear end of it, had Jacob by the throat, and she said that. The cougar would look around at her and then look back, and Jacob was dangling from the cougar's mouth. And he did that twice, and then she said, "You could almost see the thought process. What am I, you know, the cougar, what am I going to do? Should I leave? Whatever." Anyhow, finally he dropped Jacob and ran. And Vicky picked him up, and his neck snapped as she picked him up, and she thought at the time, "If he isn't dead, I've just killed him." Well, she picked him up, she came out of the brush, and I thought he was dead. His arms were hanging down limply. His eyes were open, but there was nothing there. And I took him and walked up the slope past the house. Excuse me. And I knew he was alive because each time his heart beat, there was blood coming out of his neck. And I thought again, he's dying and there's nothing I can do. Excuse me. And through this enough, I thought I had control. Anyway, got around to the front of the house, and another niece was there. Nine of us that were around this place. And my niece said, "The first thing we've got to do is get this blood stopped." And so I grabbed my handkerchief out of my pocket and put it on his neck. And my daughter Vicky, was the real heroine of what's going on, or what had gone on, had gone in and called 911. Yeah, thank you very much. And I had asked her which car we're going to take. She had a 94 LHS, which was the fastest we'd gone to place, so she said we'll take that. She didn't get out quick enough, so I went in the house and hurried her up. And she was so wise. As we left, of course, I'd ask him to be sure to have blood on hand when we got to Colville, where the closest hospital was, 22 miles. She got a towel and wet it with cold water, and we then used that to help stop the blood on that was flowing from Jacob's neck. Anyhow, I held him as she drove, and it was kind of a wild ride for the first 12 or 13 miles. And after going around the first corner and being way over in the other lane, I realized I was going to have to tell her about what speed that the various corners could be taken. And she, of course, had called for an ambulance. We met an ambulance just about 6 miles from Colville. We'd come 16 miles where they were coming six, but we had a head start. Got to the hospital, and Jacob was taken into the emergency room. An excellent doctor and excellent care was received. Jacob had over 200 stitches that were taken, 112 on the right side of his face. You can still see some of the scars after 3.5 years, but they're coming along well. The game department was there, that just so happened that someone from the game department was transporting some dogs toward Republic, and they called, got those to come over to our place, and fortunately they were able to take that cougar within probably about 2.5 hours after the attack, where they were able to track it down, even though it was a warm day and they felt that it would be unlikely that they would be able to pick up anything. Fortunately, the cougar had stepped into this creek about 75 feet upstream from where the attack occurred. They picked up the scent and then were able to follow it. Jacob, as I say, had over 200 stitches. His right collarbone was broken. And his stay in the hospital, he was still in extreme pain. And after he'd been home from the hospital, he was in the hospital for about a week. After he'd been home for about a week, he was still, each time they'd move him, he was in extreme pain. Took him to a chiropractor, and they found that there were three vertebrae that were displaced in his neck. That was the reason for the pain. One in his back was displaced. His right elbow was out of place, and his left hip was out of place. As best we can reconstruct the time that Cougar had a hold of Jacob for something less than 39 seconds. From the time and from where his cousin began screaming and where I was and how long it took us to get to various places, we figured that it was less than 39 seconds. All that damage was done and just so quickly. Cougar was, they figured, a two-year-old, between 90 and 100 pounds. Strong, of course. Jacob was not a large victim, but 32 pounds, I think, is what he weighed at that particular time. Cougar had absolutely no problem in packing him around. I think I've kind of run out. If there's some questions that I can answer, I'll be happy to try to. Again, I want to say I really appreciate the opportunity to address you. I don't want to see this happening to any other kids. It was tough on Jacob, really tough on Jacob to come down. It was, you know, we talked about this for several days. And I think that Jacob might made the final choice after his folks had talked it over, and his dad and Jacob had talked and said, if you're going down there, Jacob, can keep one little boy from being hurt or killed by a cougar, it's worthwhile. And I think that's, you know, where, how Jacob made his choices whether to come.
Thank you. Representative Smith, you have a question?
Hi. Thank you so much for making the trip, and thank you, Jacob. What a horrible experience. You said that they took the cougar or got it. Do you know why it attacked? Were they able to ascertain why it did?
Oh.
Was it hungry? Was it?
I think that Jacob was available. I think that the cougar was attracted by the noise of the lawnmower, by the kids playing and laughing, and it just happened that the kids went by where the cougar was hiding, and Jacob was the smallest one, and it just happened. It isn't necessary, I don't believe, for a cougar to be hungry in order to attack. I have some friends who one winter night a couple of years ago, during the evening while it was dark, heard some squealing outside, went outside, and here a cougar had a deer down. Now, the people would not admit to me that they shot the cougar. They said something happened to it, but the deer got away. We've got snow on the ground. They backtracked and found where the cougar had killed one of their house cats. They backtracked it from there and found where it had killed another deer. They backtracked it from there and found where it had been on the roof of their house.
Thank you.
Yeah. Another little interesting thing on this, that's up the stream from the creek where I live is a family who have two small boys. At that time, the boys were 6 and 9. I had the boys were playing outside. They had recently had moved up from Portland. And the lady's dad was a retired Oregon Fish and Wildlife employee. I had called and talked with them about, you know, I just don't know how wise it is for the kids to be playing outside and without even a dog to protect them. Well, the lady's dad, this retired fish and wildlife man, called and said, you know, really, there's nothing to be concerned about. Deer are a cougar's meat of choice. And there's plenty of deer around there, so he's not going to bother the kids. Well, within 2 months, Jacob was attacked. I understand what he's saying, but I understand also that cougars are going to eat when they can.
Thank you. Well, I just wanted one other question was, when did Washington do their ban?
96.
96, about the same time. And now you're seeing cougars, before you weren't?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I have no definitive figures on it, but in Kettle Falls, the closest community and where our mail is delivered from, friends of my wife and I used to get out and walk for exercise. They live right on the edge of town. They'd walk across the Colville River and out into what we call the Greenwood area. They quit. A lady who works, a nurse who works in the medical clinic in Kettle Falls, where I go, she and her daughter used to run in a, what we call the Colville Rice Road. And they stopped that because the 18-year-old daughter was running one day and she realized that there was a cougar that was paralleling her. And she stopped. She kept eye contact with the cougar and backed up, ran into the neighbor's house. But her blood pressure went up and her nose began to bleed spontaneously. Another friend of mine, who is a school teacher at Kettle Falls, has a small farm just a few miles from Colville. He went out one evening to do something. I mean, he's tree farming, and he drove his tractor, and at the very last moment he decided, you know, I better take a gun along. So he grabbed a shotgun. It's late in the day, it's, you know, getting along toward dark, but he sees a cougar come loping across the field at him. Well, he did everything that you're supposed to do. He was standing next to the tractor, he grabbed the gun, he held it over his head, he shouted. The cougar kept coming, and he finally realized, you know, I'm going to have to shoot. So he shot, and the cougar, he hit it alongside the nose. His nose dropped, the rear end came up, he shot it again, the cougar ran off, and they found it the next day. And the cougar was close enough, so that bird shot had made a pattern about 2.5 inches in diameter. And he told me that it was really, he showed me, it was about 15 feet away from before, you know, before he finally shot. Colville, I don't know if you're at all familiar with that. Colville is the county seat of Stevens County. It's 64 miles north of Spokane. The wildlife department just recently killed, after hunting down with hounds, a cougar that had been coming in, been sighted a number of times within the city limits of Colville. And employee by the name of Donnie Weatherman had been out hunting it, finally called in the hounds, and they got it then.
Thank you. Representative Nelson, then Representative Hunt.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Schutt, and Jacob, thank you for coming today. I think you're about the bravest kid. You and Raymond, my goodness. I am proud of you. Mr. Schutt, I just I have this great worry, and, you know, thank you for sharing these pictures as bad as they are. I think if we give those to the proper individuals, that there's no question in my mind that the governor and the House and the Senate would want to protect every child from, you know, being as emaciated as Jacob was. But boy, am I glad he's okay today, and he's so handsome and good looking. In fact, Mr. Chair, I promised him if he's this brave to come sit up here that I could take his picture. Do you think you could allow that?
I think it's entirely possible. I would just ask maybe you wait a little bit.
Okay.
Until we get a little further down.
I didn't want him to think I broke my promise as a politician. Mr. Schutt, you know, my concern, having been a farmer and have llamas and boar goats, you know, I always worried about having the llamas protect the goats from the coyotes. But I cannot, I just cannot imagine the strengths, and, you know, not being a man to know how to compare the strength of a cougar, you know, to a, you know, I don't know what to compare it to. Yeah.
The Fish and Wildlife in Washington State have a brochure they put out that says that a cougar can jump 20 feet vertically and 30 feet horizontally. Now, what kind of strength does it take to, from a standing start, to go 20 feet in the air?
Yes. Okay, that puts it pretty pictorially. And my worry is, how do individuals protect themselves? I mean, there is no way physically. So if you're there, you know, wherever a cougar is, by yourself, I mean, you're just kind of a prey, is all I know to say. And then how, you know, the concern of shooting one of those while it's attacking an individual, I'm sure that must have gone through your mind.
Yeah.
Of how you would protect him at the same time.
Yeah.
You tried to kill this.
I don't have any answers on that. Let me tell you one that came from a nurse at Holy Family Hospital, whose son was working for the U.S. Forest Service in Montana. And she said that her son was working over there, and they always took a dog out with them. And I said, well, that would be great, because the dog would warn them that there was a cougar around. She says, no, that's not the reason. The reason is that the cougar will take the dog and leave the larger people alone. Now, I don't know. That might be one thing. That's why, you know, we've got a dog. We had a dog at the time of the attack. She happened to be on the other end of the building from where the cougar was, the other end of our house, because we had company coming in. Before this ever occurred, a logger that I spoke with had begun wearing at least a sidearm as he was driving his cat around, because there's so many cougars out in the woods. One of my daughters has become a pistol packing mama, I guess.
Right.
She doesn't want to, you know, she likes to go out into the woods around our place, and we're not that wooded, you know. But it looks to me it's kind of strange to you know, to see a grown woman that's packing a pistol, but that's what she feels is necessary. What good would it do? But I'd like to have a stick, at least a walking stick, if I'm you know, walking around and the dog is with me then. Yeah. But a strange thing is that am I comfortable in my yard? When I'm mowing lawn, I'm looking over my shoulder. Yeah. And, I've taken up an awful lot of time, but Jacob.
Mr. Stewart, I want to know further. How long would it have taken somebody? To get to your home.
As far as wildlife people are concerned.
Yeah.
But if it had not been for Vicki, if my daughter Vicki had not been there, and I don't know what would happen, because she immediately addressed the problem. She immediately ran after the cougar. You know, she was there within certainly less than half a minute from the time that the cougar attacked Jacob until she was there. And but you know, as far as being armed, you know, somebody had asked me, you know, did you grab a gun and go? That, you know, that's not the thing. The thing is to be there. You know, you have to get there quickly. There was a man in Idaho about the same time that Jacob was attacked. He and his son were out. I think they were swimming, fishing, whatever, and his 12-year-old son was attacked by a cougar. The guy ran, and he actually socked the cougar in the stomach with his fist, and that got him to let go of the boy. Like Vicki going up to that cougar, you know, when somebody that you love is being hurt, you're going to do something about it, and you quit worrying.
Absolutely. Thank you, Representative. Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you both very much for coming, especially so far, to testify. You mentioned that there was a perceiving ban on hunting of cougars in Washington. Have you been involved in any legislative processes in Washington to try and correct that, to try and lift that ban? And maybe you can talk about what the outcome of that has been.
I tested Jacob and I and Vicki and Sandy all testified at a hearing in the House of Representatives in Olympia. What happened there was a issuing of permits to take problem cougars. Now, this occurred, I think, in 2000. There have been an increasing, this has allowed more cougars to be killed, and more cougars have been killed because the hunting season also has been lengthened. But we still are seeing an increasing number of cougars. Even this is a step in the right direction. But it requires that every time that a cougar is sighted, for somebody to report it. just doesn't happen. The Fish and Wildlife Department, and I'm not criticizing them, you know, you've got to have a formula that's supportable in order to know how many permits to issue if you're taking a finite approach to it. So if there have been a certain number of sightings and there have been a certain number of animals hurt or killed, then then permits will be issued. Where I live, people don't report them. I think that in 2002, I think there were reported of 6 cougars being seen in Ferry County. Was it 75 in Spokane County? I'm not sure. There was a large, large, large number. I know there's many more than that, and I have encouraged people. I've encouraged people to report them so that there's more chance of them, of more permits being issued, so that more cougars will be taken. The problem has remained severe enough that Okanagan, Ferry, and Stevens County commissioners have established within the counties their own Fish and Wildlife Department and intend to hire people with hounds to go out into the areas and take more cougars to, and do it legally, of course.
Thank you. Jacob, thanks for coming. Can you pull the microphone down to you? I have a question for you. Thanks for coming, and you're still a good-looking kid, even though you're older. Hey, I just want to ask you one question, and I appreciate you coming here today. Do you think we ought to change the law so that this doesn't happen to another little boy like you?
What do you think? Why are we here? You can speak right into that. Do you think yes or no?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I think you're a brave young man, and I appreciate you coming here today. Members, any questions of Jacob? All right.
I just wonder how old he is, Mr. Chair.
How old are you now, Jacob?
7.
You're 7. Very good.
He looks right. Like he's probably a good reader, too.
He is. Okay. Thank you both very much. I really appreciate you making the trip here.
Thank you.
Okay, the chair would like to call Steve Denny from ODF&W. Steve, are you here? Come forward, if you would, please. And whomever else you have with you that is appearing today. We're waiting for Roy Elliker, chair. Okay.
Mr. Chair, if they could bring their sheets up to...
Yeah.
Thanks.
Welcome, Roy. It's good to have you on the hot seat for 2 days or twice in the same day in front of me. I appreciate that. Appreciate the opportunity. Steve, I'll be much kinder on you. I get to beat up on Roy on a regular basis. He's used to it.
Thank you, Chair.
Welcome, and for the record, state your name and your thoughts.
Mr. Chair, for the record, Roy Elliker, Deputy Director of the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, and on my right, Mr. Steve Denny, Regional Manager for our Southwest Region. And I must say, Mr. Chair, at very difficult testimony to follow, very heartrending testimony. Even in the overflow room where I was, I think everybody was touched by those stories, and I was. So I just want to, but my testimony will not be as heartwarming, perhaps. But I'm here to give kind of a history of cougar management in the state by the department and where we're at right now on cougar and bear complaints. Refer to my prepared testimony, sir.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife offers the following comments. Cougars and bears were originally classified as predators in Oregon, which under ORS 610 provided little protection to these animals. They were viewed as vermin to be eliminated. By the early 60s, however, cougars had been nearly eliminated from the state. But concerned sportsmen, led primarily by hound hunters, went to the Oregon legislature and were successful in having cougar and bears reclassified to game animals. This classification provided these animals immediate protection under the statutory authority of the Oregon Game Commission. And, Mr. Chair, I might point out, I believe Mr. Roger Martin may testify today, and he was one who led that change in the 60s, I believe, when he was in the legislature. Under what is now the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, cougar and bear numbers have continued to grow. As populations have expanded, so have complaints. In the early days of department management, cougars were killed only in specific damage situations. Bear populations were healthy and did not need the same level of protection. As damage complaints increased, the department offered limited controlled hunting opportunities to try and control population in those areas where landowners were suffering losses. By the early 90s, the department offered a series of controlled cougar hunts with limited tag numbers throughout the state. At the same time, we went through a comprehensive planning process and developed bear and cougar plans that were adopted by the Fish and Wildlife Commission in 1993. These plans have guided management for both of these species since that time. Written into statute as ORS 498-164, Measure 18 did allow for the department and its agents to use dogs and bait as part of normal management activities. It does allow landowners to utilize dogs and bait to deal with damage to land, livestock, farm, or forest crops. It allows the department to continue research projects and to deal with damage complaints. Eventually, last session, ORS 498-166 was passed that allowed any person to kill a bear or cougar that was posing a threat to human safety as defined in the statute. I believe, Mr. Chair, you're one of the people that helped in that effort. As mentioned previously, cougars were almost eliminated from Oregon by the early 60s. We've developed a peer-reviewed and recently published model that predicts the cougar population in Oregon from the early 1900s into the future. From an estimated low of about 200 animals in 1960, our model predicted that we had about 2,500 to 3,500 cougars by about the mid-90s. And as you know, Measure 18 went into effect in 1994, I believe. Now, since that time, the population has continued to grow, now estimated to be about 5,000 animals. This growth has led to increased conflicts. Damage and human safety complaints increased dramatically during the years immediately after Measure 18 passed. This led to an immediate increase in the number of cougars taken on damage and human safety complaints, while take of bears remained relatively stable on damage but increased for human safety. Initially, harvest declined for both species as the primary hunting methods were outlawed, which was the use of dogs for cougars and the use of bait to attract bears. Since then, however, cougar harvest has increased, while bear harvest has fluctuated from year to year. Traditionally, the department has tried to reduce conflicts by controlling or decreasing cougar population growth. This is what occurred under controlled cougar hunting used previously, where hunters were targeted in the specific areas of high cougar densities. And by this, we're specifically talking about how we use the management tool using dogs to hunt cougars. By consistently removing cougars, the department was able to create vacant territories for young cats to occupy. This method of hunting reduced the number of cougars that were forced to look elsewhere to establish territories and also served as a valuable tool in slowing population growth to more manageable levels. With the loss of dogs as a management tool, the department has relied on hunters' incidental take of cougars while pursuing other game. This opportunistic approach to hunting does not allow for selective take or targeting of cougar population in a specific area, but a more broad and general harvest over greater areas. Consequently, with more cougars on public and private lands, there have been more damage, human safety complaints, and a probable increased predation on deer and elk. While some tools are available to deal with the damage and human safety problems, the department is somewhat limited in its ability to deal with predation impacts to big game populations. Currently, the department maintains generous hunting opportunities for black bear and cougar. General black bear season is open from August 1 to November 30th in eastern Oregon and August 1 to December 31st in western Oregon. In addition, the department offers over 5,600 tags for the controlled spring bear season. Cougar seasons are open now 10 months per year, with only June and July closed to protect females during the peak birthing period. Furthermore, a second general season tag is available for black bear in southwestern Oregon and for cougar in northeastern Oregon. In summary, the department strives to provide generous hunting opportunities for bear and cougar while addressing damage and human safety concerns. The department also remains responsive to address damage complaints and human safety concerns in a timely manner by providing technical assistance and continuing to educate the general public on tools available to respond to damage and human safety concerns. And we certainly appreciate the chance to appear here today, sir, with this information. And that ends our prepared testimony. Mr. Steve Denny is here because he has a long history of experience on big game and bear and cougar issues. And questions, we're here available for questions.
Thank you, Roy. Representative Nelson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Elliker, would you be kind enough to outline for us the nature of the escalating damage and the conflicts that these animals are causing?
Sure. Representative Nelson, I think because of his field experience, let me defer that to Mr. Denny.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair Krupp, members of the commission or committee. Just to give you a little background, I'm currently the regional manager for the department out of Roseburg, Oregon, responsible for the five southwest counties: Coos Curry, Douglas, Jackson, Josephine. I've been a biologist for the state for the Department of Fish and Wildlife for over 25 years, working in northeast Oregon, southeast Oregon, and the last 18 years in Roseburg. As a district wildlife biologist, I dealt with a lot of bear and cougar complaints, since we seem to be the hotbed along with northeast Oregon for bear and cougar complaints in the state. I also initiated the southwest Oregon cougar study in 1992, which is currently ongoing, as it has been ongoing for going on 11 years now. So with that, Chair Krupp, Representative Nelson, I believe your question was outlining the nature of the escalating damage. To go back in history
and the conflict.
To go back a little bit in history, pre-Measure 18, we did see increasing cougar and bear complaints at a rising level. With the passage of Measure 18, we saw a very rapid increase in cougar complaints. And bear complaints are a little bit different. They seem to jump around from year to year. Primarily, I think, based on habitat issues and food availability. When we get drought years, like it's shaping up to be this year, with berry crops that don't last very long, early come on and early dry up of berry crops, we tend to see lots of black bear complaints. Bears are hungry. Going into the wintertime, they tend to roam around, enter into city limits and in rural areas, and we see a large increase in bear complaints, both in human safety and in livestock complaints. The cougar complaints, when I first got to Roseburg in 1984, almost all the cougar complaints were livestock related. That changed since the passage of Measure 18 to a large portion of those being human safety concerns as well as livestock. And I think there's three reasons for that. One was the passage of Measure 18. Two was the number of attacks that you've heard a couple testimonies here in neighboring states, including the two fatalities in California. And then an increasing cougar population, as we outlined in our testimony. So we've seen that rise in conflict both from the livestock side and from the human safety side on cougar as well as bear over the most recent years.
Follow up.
Yes.
Does the agency keep track of the costs of answering citizens' complaints?
Representative Nelson, we have not kept track of the costs. We keep track of individual damage complaints. Each damage complaint is unique, whether it's livestock or human safety, whether it's an urban versus a rural situation. We may spend anywhere from 10 minutes on the phone to literally hours if it involves examining a cougar or bear taken on a damage or a human safety complaint. So it's very hard to analyze the time, but we have kept track of the individual complaints as they come into the office, the types, what we've done to resolve them, who we've referred them to, those types of things. But we do not have the costs.
Is there a, you know, 10 minutes to 10 hours, or I could even see taking 16, 18 hours to track one and and trap it and get it moved. Why don't we document those costs? Because I would think it would be very critical to know what it's costing you to track a wild animal like this. Insurance companies, are they involved with these private citizens? Do they want to know? Do costs reimbursed ever? Or?
Chair Krupp, Representative Nelson, we literally receive thousands of complaints, not
thousands,
just Baron
like
Cougar.
5,000, 10,000?
Thousands. I don't have that figure with me right now.
Is it bigger than a bread box?
It's bigger than a bread box.
So would that be over 5,000 a year, over 10,000?
I would say it's, I know in Southwest Oregon, the five counties alone, we probably deal with over 1,000 complaints of various types. Deer, squirrels in the attic, skunks under the foundation, bear and cougar, a variety, turkeys in the backyard, a variety of complaints. And like I say, we do get the amount, the cost of the damage that's incurred, that is written down, but the cost that the department incurs in time spent resolving them has not been kept track of.
Mr. Chair,
one more.
Well, would you? We heard the $75 million issue for one area, for the entire state. I mean, is this $1 billion of damage? I'm trying to get my hands around it, but I'm a money person. So,
Vice Chair Gilman, Representative Nelson, I don't have that figure for you.
But you'd say it's just beyond belief.
Well, in the case of timber, of course, as you heard, Representative Krieger. Amounts to a very significant cost, cost of livestock that are damaged, those types of things. But we don't have those figures. We don't seem to get the bear damage to trees in eastern Oregon that we do in western Oregon, primarily because of the species and the way that the trees grow down in western Oregon versus eastern Oregon. Even don't get much of the tree damage in the Cascades. So, like I say, it's very regional in cost, and I don't have that for you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, I believe that the Oregon Farm Bureau has done some work on wildlife damage estimates, and I know right now, as a result of, I think, a bill last session, there's currently jointly chaired by Department of Agriculture and Department of Fish and Wildlife, the Wildlife Damage Task Force, or Advisory Task Force, that's meeting around the state, talking to landowners, trying to take a look at the issue of wildlife damage and what better ways we could be using to address that. In fact, there's a report probably coming to this committee within the next month from the Wildlife Damage Advisory Task Force reporting on its meeting so far around the state. And I believe it's probably headed to this committee is where the report would be delivered.
And last on the same subject,
last
Mr.
question.
Chair.
Thank you.
I guess what I'm trying to get at is, I mean, wouldn't the help of dogs and volunteer hunters in controlling this dangerous terrorist, this, these cougars and wild bears, wouldn't that reduce your burden, your cost?
Chair Krupp, Representative Nelson, I don't think there's any doubt that with the hounds tool and we would be able to reduce populations. I don't believe
respond more quickly.
Yes, yes. I don't believe that those damage complaints and even the human safety ones would go away. We will still have them. We had them prior to Measure 18. We would continue to have them, but they would be at a reduced level. We do use volunteer houndsmen. The law does allow a landowner to assign an agent with proper documentation as long as the damage control occurs on the property where the damage is occurring. We do use those. We've continued to use them for a long time. But, yes, the costs, we would be able to reduce the populations and hence the increasing damage with the use of dogs. Yes.
Thank you, Representative. So, Steve, you think that the dogs and bait are the most effective tools?
in controlling these populations?
Chair Krupp, they're one of the tools. They are very effective, but we use a whole variety of them depending on the situation. In some cases, a live trap is the most efficient way to trap a bear, or in some cases, even a cougar. They're in a subdivision type where you can't use dogs or bait. You really don't want to attract the animal or keep it there. So we use a variety of tools. Those would be two of them that we would use, and they are very effective.
Okay, thank you. Representative Hunt, you have a question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple things coming out of your testimony. One, you gave us the chart talking about cougar populations, which does show, at least since 1995, shows a clearly increasing population. And if we had a human population laid alongside that, I think that the conflicts between those two are obvious, increasing population as a whole. You also said in your testimony that the department is somewhat limited in your ability to deal with predation impacts to big game populations. I assume that you're limited under current statute. What do you have some specific recommendations of what would be the ways that would lift, that would increase your ability to deal with predation impacts? And we've got one specific bill we're dealing with now. We have another specific bill before us. Do you have some other suggestions that you're bringing forward? Because you're identifying a problem, you're affirming at least part of the problem. Are there some specific solutions?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hunt, on both issues, I guess. First of all, you're very correct about the increasing trend of human population here, too. And one of the things that, from a biological viewpoint, it's certainly the number of human cougar conflicts, not only driven by the fact that cougar populations have risen, but it's also driven a little bit by the fact that human populations have risen, particularly in some of those fringe rural areas. So what we're seeing is more and more interaction. But there's more cougars and there's more people, and that's driving the numbers of conflicts, or people just seeing cougars in some ways. As to your second issue, we don't have maybe a comprehensive list, but we could put one together of some ideas of this. But on testimony of this bill, in other words, we feel in some ways without the use of hounds, again, as my testimony said, the use of hounds and using quotas in specific areas, we could target in these specific areas the numbers of cougars we think is a fair mix between big game herds and, say, cougars, and also bears, but particularly cougars, because cougars prey on deer now all year long. And they prey on them when they're young, they prey on them when they're adult and mature, they prey on them when they're old. So with the use of hounds and sport hunting, that's a special tool for us on cougar management that now we don't have, and that is what is meant by that paragraph there. As far as I'd be happy to come back with kind of a longer discussion on a more comprehensive list of other issues, but my comments today were just to address the Measure 18 issues.
Yeah. Representative,
sure.
One follow-up. That's very helpful. I appreciate that. The other thing I guess I came away from your testimony, correct me if I'm wrong, I sense some contrast in your testimony between the sense of the significantly increasing cougar population and the sense of the bear population, which was fluctuating but generally flat looking back at the last 5 or 6 years. Is that a fair assessment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Hunt, I think that's a fair characterization. Cougar populations have definitely increased rapidly in the last 10 years or so. Bear populations have increased in certain parts of the state. Overall, they have increased, but slightly and not as rapidly as the cougar population. We've remained relatively stable in bear populations in other parts of the state. In certain parts of the state, where you estimate around 25 to 30,000.
Okay, Representative Gilman.
Do you feel that bear and cougar populations are effectively controlled at this time?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gilman, as I said earlier, the hound and bait tool is a very effective way to manage populations. And what we saw when Measure 18 was passed was a large drop-off in harvest of both bear and cougar. we changed the seasons around, reduced the tags, lengthened the seasons, as we said in our testimony, two bears and two cougars in certain parts of the state. We brought in a lot of hunters. What it did was it changed the harvest from a targeted harvest to an incidental take, usually by deer and elk hunters when they're out in the woods hunting deer and elk. And so it's changed the management. I don't believe, as evidenced by the cougar population, that we are controlling cougar populations by any means. Bear populations may be a little bit different based on habitat and food availability. It's going to fluctuate around. We do have the ability to, I think, better manage the populations with all the tools available to us, including hounds and bait.
Yeah, one more. Sure. And with this increase in cougar population, deer and elk numbers?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gilman, depending on where you are in the state, we've seen some decreases in calf survival and recruitment in Northeast Oregon. We've seen declines in calf and fawn recruitment in other parts of the state. Predation is one of the limiting factors, one of the reasons for that, along with other things such as habitat, hard winters. We've had a drought conditions the last couple of years. We have designed the elk nutrition predation study as a way to try to evaluate at what level or what impact the predation has compared to at least the nutrition part of it. So yes, predation can affect populations, but the question is what the effect is, what the level is, and that's what we're trying to determine.
So you haven't determined accurately that since the law passed and the increase of populations, that it has negatively, adversely affected the populations?
Chair Krupp, we've seen the populations decline. We've seen calf recruitment decline. We know that predation is one of the major issues. Like I say, the purpose of the research is to determine at what level predation effects are affecting those elk and deer populations. And we haven't even completed 1 year of the study yet. You heard previous testimony that of the preliminary data, but it is only less than 1 year of information. But I say it does appear that predation is a significant factor on limiting those populations, at least in Northeast Oregon. A little different story in Southwest. It's not as big an issue or not as drastic an impact as it seems to be up in Northeast at this time.
Okay, Representative Nelson, you have another question?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'm just sticking to money, thinking like an administrator right now. Is it true that the department, Mr. Elliker, Mr. Denny, that the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife requests money from the APHIS Wildlife Services Division? The Chair, animal plant health, for those that don't know, inspection service?
Yes, Chair Krupp, Representative Nelson, we do set aside a request where we have requested $80,000 to $120,000 of general fund monies for the APHIS program, Wildlife Services, and we also provide them with $90,000 per biennium of license dollars targeted specifically at bear and cougar damage issues.
So, just to finish this subject, please, Mr. Chair, a portion of that funding that's supposed to be going to the animal plant health inspection program is used for cougar and bear control?
Yes, Representative Nelson, that $90,000 is targeted specifically at bear and cougar damage resolution.
$90,000?
Yes.
And I'm just wondering, you know, in this time of short funding, could we reduce that number if we repealed Measure 18? I mean, your cost restoring, you know, the management to the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife?
Chair Krupp, Representative Nelson, I personally don't believe we could. The Wildlife Services provide us with a very valuable assistance, and they're well-trained. They have professional equipment. They have things that private landowners and volunteers don't have, and that's the ability to enter into contracts with landowners, timber companies, even federal agencies, BLM and Forest Service, to allow them to do control activities on their property for animals that are moving on and off private lands. They provide provide a very valuable service. Like I say, that is their job, is to deal with bear and cougar complaints along with other predation issues on livestock. But without their services, we would be relying on our biologists as well as the landowners to basically be taking care of the problem. I think they provide a very valuable service to us.
And lastly, Mr. Chair,
please, we need to move.
Wouldn't voluntary houndsmen, help in the reduction of the cost, which is what we certainly ought to be looking at, as well as responding promptly?
Yes, Chair Krupp, Representative Nelson. As I said before, we do use voluntary houndsmen. The landowners have the ability to assign an agent, which helps cut costs. We try to use volunteer houndsmen when it's appropriate. There are some limitations to how we can use them at this current time. It's got to be on the property where the damage is occurring, those types of things. But yes, volunteer houndsmen do provide a valuable service. Unfortunately, since Measure 18, we have seen a reduction in the houndsmen available. They basically have not kept their, some of them have gotten out of the hound dog business, but we still have some very dedicated, well-trained individuals with good dogs that can and do help us on studies and resolving damage complaints.
Representative Beyer.
Thank you. I've acknowledged all along that we do have a problem for the cougars. I'm not quite as convinced that we have the problem with bears that we do cougars, and I've been a little concerned about combining these two issues together in just a blanket repeal. And we've also got kind of a little notice from the governor who's not real interested in a repeal or an overturning the voters' wishes. So I just assume that we could find a way to deal with this problem and that's acceptable to everybody and have a solution. So what do you think of that and the Washington solution that they came up with, how
Mr. Chair, Representative Beyer, I'm not familiar with the Washington State management regime, but we could certainly look into it and get back to this committee. I'm just not familiar with it at all, what they do to take extra steps with these extra permits. But I certainly will find out and report back.
Anything else, Representative?
No.
Okay. Thank you. Two more quick questions, and we need to move along. I'm going to tell everyone we're going to go to at least 3:30. We've got a couple of members I think have to leave then, and so we will start platooning people very shortly. We do want to hear from the opposite side of this issue, and we'll have them up next. You do acknowledge that you have had an increase in public safety complaints in bear and cougar, correct?
Yes.
An increase in the complaints for public safety.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Right. Why do you think we've had them?
As I mentioned earlier, I think there's a number of reasons. Roy pointed out the fact that we have increasing cougar populations, a slightly increasing bear population, and more people in the state. Many of them are living on the outskirts of town and rural areas and that sort of thing. I think there's also been the heightened awareness of with attacks in other states of concerns over bear and cougar. It used to be that, people were surprised and enjoyed seeing a cougar. From what you've heard today, that is no longer the case. People are worried about their kids' safety, that sort of thing. We've noticed that in previous years, 10, 15, 20 years ago, you'd have cougars, but they'd be transient cougars moving through urban and rural areas. And right now, I think we've got a population of cougars, especially, that have been raised and live and spend their life down in the valley floors, at least in western Oregon. I assume same thing in eastern Oregon, that live around people. Their primary food source or cats and dogs and those types of things. So you've got a population that's not maybe as sensitized, I guess, to people, or more sensitized to people and live around them. Our ability to take care of those complaints, given the small ownerships, is sometimes a problem in rural Oregon with the small ownerships. All those, I think, have cause that increased conflict to be, at least we hear more about it all the time.
Okay, so would you say then that probably the ban on using bait and dogs has contributed to those public safety complaints?
Chair Krupp, I think they've contributed, yes. I think there's some other factors, but yes, I think it's been a contributing factor.
Okay. Any further comments or questions? Representative Smith.
I just have a quick question, a couple for Mr. Denny. You talked about the lower elk numbers in Northeast Oregon. Do you think that's it's obviously a reduction in the cost? People aren't going to buy tags if they can't go hunt, so it's a loss of income to ODFW.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, when populations drop below our management objectives, which they have done in Northeast Oregon, it affects our ability to offer, it limits the number of tags that we can offer sportsmen, both for bulls and for antlerless animals, and that's a net stray reduction in the revenue to the department and recreational opportunity for the hunters.
Thank you. Just one quick follow-up. Would you agree then that the inability of the state of Oregon to utilize this general season hunting and without the use of sporting dogs is a loss of a significant management tool?
Chair Krupp, Representative Smith, as I mentioned, it's one of the contributing factors. It's apparently a significant factor up there. What we're trying to figure out is what the level is up there. And so by repealing it, you can't guarantee that it's automatically going to rise right back up again. That's something that will be determined, but it is a significant factor.
Thank you. Okay, thanks.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Appreciate you both. Chair would like to call Kelly Peterson and James Ince. Please come forward. Thank you for coming today. Welcome to you both, and whoever would like to start first, please state your name.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Krupp, committee members. My name is Kelly Peterson, and I'm here today representing the Humane Society of the United States and our 90,000 Oregon members and constituents. And we offer this testimony in strong opposition to House Bill 2436. And I do want to make mention to the fact that I believe there are two people here today in opposition to this bill. Obviously, it does not represent the amount of people who support outlawing bear baiting and hound hunting, but I wanted to make mention because it's pretty clear that some of the folks have had much longer than the 36 hours notice that we were given. Oregon voted against outlawing bear baiting and hound hunting in 1994 and again in 1996 with ballot measure 34, and it was soundly defeated of 42% to 58%. I also wanted to mention the stories we heard were horrible and compelling, but also our laws do allow us to deal with these situations currently, and other states have occasional instances of cougars interacting with people. And even those states that have hound hunting, and again, I could bring documentation for that, there's no proof that hound hunting isn't going to eliminate these types of situations. Provisions in ballot measure 18 and in other laws specifically allow the use of bait or dogs to target individual problem animals. And according to the statute that was mentioned by the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, 498.164, any landowner can use bait or dogs for the taking of black bears or cougars in accordance to the damage statute. And the landowner has the flexibility then to determine what the best situation or what the best and appropriate way to handle the situation is. The damage control provision was also liberalized last session with House Bill 2967, and that clarified that any person can kill a bear or cougar without a permit if it's perceived to be a human safety. And the definition includes just seeing a cougar in the daylight near a structure where there are humans. And I won't go into that further. I have it in my written testimony. But Also, you know, we feel if the proponents of House Bill 2436 were serious about reducing the conflicts between bears and people, bear baiting would not be considered as a solution. Setting out random mounds of feed for bears clearly and unmistakably habituates the animals to human-scented foods and causes the animals to raid campgrounds, cabins, cars, any other human properties. You know, in our view, House Bill 2436 is not about public safety. That, we believe, was addressed last session in House Bill 2967. That was a bill that, according to our understanding, passed because initially the Attorney General's interpretation was, and our interpretation was, Measure 18 also provided for the taking of any bear or cougar that threatened your public safety. Even the governor had issued a veto letter prior to that session saying that he wouldn't support that bill. In the year 2001, that same bill came back up because the new Attorney General's interpretation was that Measure 18 did not include public safety vehicles, so 2967 passed. So I will leave it at that and maybe pass it over to Jim Entz.
Thank you. Welcome, Jim. For the record, state your name, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is James Entz, and I've been a rancher and small woodland owner in southern rural Douglas County for over 20 years. I've raised two fine children and run horses and have other livestock and pets, as well as timberland. My 160-acre ranch is surrounded by the Tiller Ranger District of the Umpqua National Forest. And which has been determined to be some of the finest cougar habitat in the area, and certainly prime bear habitat. So much so that numerous scientific cougar studies have been and are being conducted in the remote forests near my home. In all of my years of working my timberland and tending my ranch, I have unmistakably seen only one cougar, and possibly another. Neither of these sightings were anywhere near human dwellings. Cougar are extremely reclusive and are almost never seen. Also, I have seen a few, only a few, bear in this time as well. Both of these animals stay to themselves and are shy of humans. Moreover, I've never heard of any humans being threatened by cougar or bear in the 2+ decades of my residence on Upper Cow Creek and the Umpqua Drainage. Had there been any such occasions, I would have heard about them, as I was president of our local community center for 10 of those years, assisted with search and rescue, and make my firefighting equipment available to the volunteer fire department. In other words, I have my ear to the rail. Occasionally, a rogue animal, usually aged or diseased, has had to be hunted down and dealt with. However, this invariably is done under the supervision of the State Fish and Wildlife Commission, the only governmental agency capable of determining the need for such drastic measures and the best equipped to carry them out, in my opinion. I'm a member of the Oregon Farm Bureau, and I'm not an animal rights extremist, as may have been suggested by the gentleman from Safari International. My timberland has also not suffered any measurable increase in damage due to bear since Measure 18. Bear are a part of Oregon's natural history and heritage, and although damage will inevitably occur, Oregon agriculture must recognize that as a reasonable cost of doing business, and that natural resources are managed for multiple use. My children grew up in the Umpqua National Forest and played in the woods without fear. Children currently in the neighborhood do the same. As is prudent for residents in rural Oregon, parents make sure that kids are brought in by sunset. In closing, I'd like to say a few words about my experiences with the hound runners. Before Measure 18 took effect, Each year I would end up with their dog straying, lost on my property, often malnourished and with signs of mistreatment. I would nurse the poor hounds until the owner managed to find his way onto my place and asked if I'd seen his dogs. When asked why the dogs were so skinny and starving, the answer was, "We keep them hungry so they track better." Well, in my opinion, this blood sport is not a sport at all, but a barbaric abomination. I have to be honest with you. That's my experience in 20 years of dealing with these folks out there. It was rightfully outlawed by most civilized countries around the world and by numerous American states. Hooray for Oregon in the passage of Measure 18. It is working just as it was envisaged, and I can share with you today that we in the mountains have no problems as a result. In fact, there has been no significant increase in either bear or cougar populations in the prime habitat I share with these magnificent creatures. Let me remind us all, there have been no documented cougar attacks or injuries or deaths in Oregon to date. Oregonians have twice expressed their will in this matter, and I find it remarkable that there are those that aren't getting it. What part of no isn't being understood here? I urge you to turn aside these repeated efforts to subvert the intent of the Oregon ballot measure initiative process. That closes my prepared comments. However, two of my neighbors were unable to come the 400-mile round trip to get to Salem from our remote area. Otherwise, they would be sitting with me here this afternoon. I do have a couple of brief statements that I'd like to read to you and enter into the record, if that would be okay with you, Mr. Chair.
Are these these two here, sir?
Indeed, they are.
They are. Mm-hmm. Okay. Instead of reading them, could you just summarize them briefly for us?
Okay.
Thank you.
Janet Levinson Barnes, a neighbor of mine on Upper Cow Creek Road in Azalea, has presented written testimony opposing HB 2436. She has worked for 25 years as a forester and a wildlife biologist, as you'll see from the materials you've just received. And she's currently a consulting wetlands biologist, forester, and a wildlife biologist. She states very clearly that as a resident of Douglas County and as somebody that rides her horse in the national forest and in the forested remote areas of the county, that she has not seen any difficulty with regard to cougar or bear, especially since the taking effect of Measure 18. So I would refer you to that document. I'm sure she'd be very happy if you would read through it carefully and note her opinions. Mrs. Marty Ginsburg runs horses on the Anchor Ranch down the creek from me some miles, and she similarly is very opposed to the repeal of Measure 18. She speaks eloquently, I feel, to that effect also in her written testimony. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you, James. Appreciate you making the trip here today. Representative Smith?
I have a question for Mr.
Smith. You need to speak up, Patty. Nobody can hear you.
I'm just in shock still, I guess. I have a question for Ms. Peterson. On you talked in your testimony about the bill that was passed last time, House Bill 2967.
Right.
Did you support that?
Chair Krupp, Representative Smith, we on the Senate side tried to work to get, actually on the House side and the Senate side, tried to work to get various provisions in there so that individuals actually had a foundation before they killed a cougar, that they were actually a threat to their human safety. So, yeah, initially we didn't like the bill. It had some provisions, yeah, on the Senate side.
James, obviously you've been here and you've heard some of the testimony previously, obviously pretty emotional and heartfelt, mm-hmm. And I appreciate your comments. I believe you're an honorable man, and you've told us very clearly what you believe is the case. Mm-hmm. But we've heard other testimony of increasing sightings. How do you want us to reconcile the two of those? Are you just in an area where for some reason we don't have an increase in the populations where they're they're interfacing with human beings, and we do others. How do you reconcile that?
Well, I can only tell you anecdotally that again, as I mentioned earlier, I am in prime habitat. There are definitely cougar in my area. We hear them at night. We see sign. This has not changed since Measure 18 took effect. I have neighbors that have seen them. As I mentioned, I've only seen one for sure. So I don't know how I can reconcile it, except that perhaps in areas where there's been an increase in human habitation, in the rural urban-rural interface, more people are moving out there to establish residence, and that would seem to explain for some increase in sightings. However, I don't think that sightings can necessarily be equated to damage or hazard. This is one of the most wonderful examples of Oregon wildlife, and it's a blessing to see one of these animals. The panic that occurs in the part of some people because they see a cougar is reminiscent of how wolves were treated historically in times past. So I think that hopefully that answers your question the best I can in any case.
Fair enough. Thank you both very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks for the opportunity to be here.
You bet. Chair would like to call George Johnson, Wayne Endicott, and Don Poole, please. Would you come forward, the three of you? And what I'm going to try to do is try to bring up as many of you in groups as I can so that you can share your thoughts at the same time and we can continue to move forward. Thank you all very much. And each one of you state your name when you begin testimony.
Chair of Committee, I'm Wayne Endicott. I'm from Springfield, Oregon.
Go ahead.
Yes, I'm Don Poole with Oregon Bow Hunters from Salem.
Okay. George Johnson, Central Oregon.
Okay. Wayne?
Chair, I appreciate the chance to come up here and testify. I own an archery shop in Springfield, Oregon, and it gives me an opportunity to be real in touch with wildlife management. We have several mounted cougar in the shop, which gives, you know, opportunity for a lot of discussion. Since Measure 18, the discussion of cougar and public safety has just exploded. I spent a half a day on the phone yesterday calling different schools, elementary schools, talking just to the secretary, some to the principals, talked to a government employee that's actually a government trapper. He asked me not to mention his name because he signs a hush clause, cannot be proactive on this issue. He stated to me that the cougar issue was an exploding state of affairs with him. He was on his way right then to run a cat that had just killed two goats in Douglas County last night. I asked him several pointed questions. One, an estimate on livestock loss per month for his area in Douglas County, which he just works north Douglas County. He said anywhere from $10,000 to $30,000 per month in loss of livestock. He gave me one individual story. A woman had called next to Yoncalla Grade School a year ago and said there was a large cat pacing the fence between the children that were playing and her house. He showed up expecting just to find a small house cat. When he showed up, she pointed to where the cat was and where the fence was. He went out and found a large track. Brought his dogs out in pending public safety, ran the cat. It treed within 100 yards of the school ground. He harvested the cat. It weighed in 160-pound, full, healthy male cat. His statement to me, without a fence, that was just the grace of God that we did not lose a child at that time. That cat was hunting. It was looking for prey at the time. In my own area, Briggs and Yolanda School is in Springfield. It's downtown. It's not downtown Springfield, but it's located well within city limits. I had a lady come by my shop, wanted to purchase a set of night vision binoculars. She just definitely did not look like a woman that wanted a set of night vision binoculars. I asked her what her concerns were, and she says, "Well, I have a cougar in my backyard." And, you know, I had my doubts when she told me where she lived according to the school grounds, and I showed up, and in a molehill next to her house, there was a large tom cougar track there. Her dogs and her cats had been disappearing. Within a week, there was a letter gone home to all the neighborhood schools, and there was a big assembly organization went on to warn all the school children, and no school children were to be allowed to walk home after a Springfield police officer had that particular cat or a different cat run across in front of his patrol car directly. Yesterday, Mohawk, Crest, Trent Elementary, Bohemia, all the schools that I, those are some of the schools that I contacted and have had several cougar sightings on their playgrounds after the children have been dismissed back to class, and have had assemblies instructing on safety on how parents are to take them home at that period of time. Most of these are conducted in the middle, and most of these sightings have been in the winter time during the, you know, winter and spring months. You know, I have four children, both all went to Walderville, and in 97 they had a sighting on the school grounds and had the same similar type of assembly that went on. The public safety issue since Measure 18's passed on Cougar in particular has just been devastating. I mean, it's, you know, it's just by the grace of God that we haven't lost a child, you know, to this. And, you know, it'd just be, you know, up to, you know, the lawmakers of this state, you know, basically to put an injunction in there to where we can have some kind of, you know, reasonable management tools, to heal this public safety issue we have going on. Thank you.
Thank you, Wayne.
I just wanted to relate a story, I guess, that has a lot to do with safety of all the people that enjoy the outdoors. I moved down here from Alaska and hunting Oregon really for the first few times. I ended up taking my fiance with me a month before we got married. And on the way to our hunting area, I showed her how to do some cow calls, so it would take the attention away from me. I called in a bull. The bull left. She was still making some cow calls, and a cougar came in behind her. She heard a low purr growl behind her, and I didn't see it or hear it. I was only 30 yards away, but she did. So, you know, it's something to be contented with, and I just want to tell that story. So.
Thank you. And how long ago was that, sir?
2 years ago.
2 years ago. Okay. Welcome.
I live in Central Oregon now. In the last year, we've had two incidents just recently in Bend. About 6 weeks ago, there was a cougar took a deer and killed a native about 75 feet from somebody's backyard. Their kids were sitting at the breakfast table when this occurred. 20 minutes later, they were on their way to the school bus, normally, not that day. And in that area, south of Bend, most of the kids are being taken to school in cars. One of my workmates lives out towards Fort Rock. He has 160 acres, very remote. Dog started barking in the middle of the night. Told it to be quiet. Next morning when he got up, he had a dead deer 15 feet from the house. He has four kids. The oldest one is 6 years old.
You gentlemen believe this is a public safety issue?
Yes.
Very much so.
Chair, if I could add, you know, just one thing. It's rare that you ever run into anybody in conversation, you know, in probably the last 5 years that hasn't had some kind of cougar encounter. Those of you that were able to share in the wonderful lunch that we had that the folks put on out here. Vern and Paula Herrick, they own Herrick Produce on the McKenzie Highway. They lost two goats last year to a cougar in the valley floor there. And we've never had any cougar, you know, in the valley floor in history, to our knowledge. My father has a farm there in Walderville, and he's 86 years old, and he called me this summer at the shop. He said, son, you're not going to believe what I got tracks of walking across the garden in freshly tilled soil. It's a cougar, and that cougar reigned rampage till finally it was harvested after it killed several of Herrick's goats. And I just spoke with them, you know, today, you know, just before lunch when they were preparing it. It's just, you know, one of those incidences. Last week, Bill Ford lost a dog Dave Workin also lost a dog up Upper Camp Creek to cougar. They found both the kills. You know, that's just in the last week in Lane County in our area. I mean, it's a continuing problem. It's only getting worse. You know, like I say, it's just, you know, the fact we haven't lost a child, it's just grace of God.
Okay. Well, thank you all very much. Appreciate your comments today. Chair would like to call Ted Kistner, Jim Welsh, and Tom Ursary. Welcome, sir.
Okay, I'm Dr. Ted Kistner. I'm a retired veterinarian from Corvallis. I believe I'm listed as a wildlife biologist. I do have a minor degree in wildlife management. During my 35 years of professional activity, I worked in the realm of diseases of domestic and animals and wildlife and the relationship to humans. These activities range from St. Croix in the U.S. Virgin Islands, 13 southeastern states, Idaho, Nevada, and Oregon. During the 70s and 80s, I was contracted with the Department of Fish and Wildlife as a wildlife veterinarian. My concern regarding the burgeoning bear and cougar population is twofold: that of predation on our big game herds and the potential for increased disease and parasite transmission between the predators, wildlife, and humans. My concern regarding, our deer and elk herds are being threatened with decline statewide due to poor nutrition based or as a result of the limited logging. Reproduction is limited when nutrition isn't optimum, and disease resistance and alertness to avoid predators is reduced. Also, the herds are being pounded by uncontrolled bear and cougar populations. Proof is offered in what has happened to the Sledge Springs and Wanaha deer and elk populations over the past 15 or so years. This resulted from the fact that cougars were coming across from Washington into the Oregon areas because dogs were not permitted in the management area and Washington side. Without proper management of bear and cougar, we will see marked decline in our herds statewide. This is not a legacy I'd like to leave with my grandchildren. Regarding diseases and parasites, I've been very brief, but with greater predator populations, I expect increases in such parasites as trichina and trichinosis with spillover to humans. Cannibalism, to me, is rampant in whether it's cougar, bear, coyotes. When they're hungry, they're going to eat what they can. If it's another of their own kind that's invading their territory, they're going to take him and eat him. I think we see this type of thing happening in humans, particularly with the two-year-old animals that are dispersing and are being kicked around by all the territorial animals. Similarly, we will probably witness an increase in transmission of Escherichia coli, the E. coli 0157 that's been responsible for a lot of food poisoning in humans. This is a fecal-oral transmission route. If we have just a couple animals in a given area, the contact between animals and feces of one another is very remote. With high numbers, the contact is much greater. Consequently, rates of transmission are very high. If chronic wasting disease is introduced into Oregon big game, may heaven forbid, I fear rapid spread by the feces of wine-raging male cougars if the fecal-oral route of transmission is proven as suspected. For the above reasons, I encourage the committee to pass the bill and hope hound hunting will be reinstated statewide. I thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir. Tom, Jim, whoever's next.
Mr. Chair and committee members, I'm Jim Welsh, lobbyist for the Oregon State Grange. We are a 19,000-member fraternal organization dedicated to the values that strengthen Oregon families and communities. And Oregon State Grange certainly agrees with House Bill 2436 and asks that it is passed. Our specific policy on this was developed a number of years ago after ballot measure 18. And it states the Oregon State Grange supports efforts to return to the use of dogs and bait for hunting cougars and bears under the direction of the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. Mr. Chair, after you've heard all the testimony, we realize that there is a problem out there, and I was elected and served on the committee that heard this in 1995 for the first time because we wanted to overturn it after ballot measure 18 was passed. But we knew that we didn't have political clout at that point in time. But ever since then, there's been increased sighting, increased incidents reported to me and to others, and even in our small community just outside of Elmira. It is a rural urban interface area where there's nearly 100 houses and 5 and 10 acre tracts out there. And we just sighted one, my wife and I, as we were eating dinner 1 year ago, sitting on our, only about 250 feet away outside the dinner window. We, of course, let everybody in the community know about it because we have a lot of children around the area. And I have been out on a hunt with the county and the federal trapper when a constituent had a problem up near Monroe. It just continues on. There's going to be more and more stories unless we have the tools needed that are provided before ballot measure 18 went into effect. And we hope this will pass. We hope something like this will occur here in the legislature immediately, because we all know that and realize when there's a problem bear or a problem cougar and we react to that as a reactive response, it's too late. It could be too late to do something about it. Many of our ranchers have lost their animals. It's too late then. We didn't have this problem many years ago, 10 to 15 years ago, and it's just getting worse. It is a good bill, and it should pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Tom?
Tom Mercury from Smith River. I'm a director with the Oregon Family Farm Association, and I'd like to talk a little bit about our watershed on the Smith River. 98-99, we had herds of deer in our valley feeding in there with our cattle, and in 2000 they disappeared. That's when we started having calves disappear. After the deer left, after the deer were eaten, we had no idea there's that many cougars in there eating our livestock up. In a 6 month period, we lost 54 calves. I got one cougar that killed a llama, one of my pack llamas, in my backyard. It took me 3 days, and I had never seen this cougar. I hunted him. I'm a good hunter, and I never seen this cougar until a U.S. trapper came out and we got him. It was a 3-year-old, 100-pound male. I thought that was the end of it until they started getting my neighbors. They got one of his llamas and two deer right in his yard. They got the cougar in a snare later on. But we end up getting, I got the 23rd cougar on my property in December of this year, or December of, after losing four llamas from Thanksgiving to Christmas time, I lost four llamas to cougars. The U.S. trapper come out, and on the second one I lost, and the next day put the dogs on it, but a bear got to the llama, and we couldn't get the cougar, so I had to put another llama back up there for bait and to get the cougar. But the last cougar I got was close to 200 pounds, over 8 foot long, and he was aged at over 8 years old. The U.S. trapper come out and got him. I don't know where this guy's at in Douglas County, but we go to our commissioners all the time in Douglas County, and we ask our commissioners for more support. Every time we get rid of a cougar or a problem bear, another moves in. We just can't get rid of them. Our hands are tied. We're not allowed to pursue these animals off our property. That's the reason we can't get houses over there to bring their dogs, because they're going to get thrown in jail. The dogs are going to get confiscated if they run off our property. And that's the law. We can kill them, but they come down at nighttime. They kill our game at nighttime when we're sleeping. They're born and bred and raised on state and federal land, and our hands are tied. And now with the budget cut going on right now, they already told us, the U.S. trappers, is we can't do nothing. We're not going to be able to come out no more. We called 2 weeks after I got my last cat and killed my last llama, and the U.S. trapper couldn't come out. So we lost 6 more calves since then, and got no support at all from Fish and Game, period. And the USDA wants to, but their hands are tied. But if you just give us some dogs, by God, we can get these and save the state a lot of money. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you, gentlemen, very much. I'm going to try to get through everyone here because I really do want to hear from you all. I do want to ask the professional lobbyists to hold off for a moment. I would like to get the people that have traveled over 100 miles to come here. That's quite an effort, and I appreciate it. So I am going to call. Is Arlene Kovash here? Arlene, are you here? She's not here, right? Okay. How about Donald Haney? Donald, come forward. Garland, is it Teich? Please come forward, sir. And Eldon Deerdorf? Eldon, are you here?
He's in the overflow room.
He's in the overflow? Well, why don't you have him come? Gentlemen, please sit and state your name and give us your thoughts on the subject.
Please. Thank you, Chairman Crofton, Representative. Appreciate the opportunity to address you briefly. I just wanted to offer my feedback. Having lived in Oregon for most of my life out in the country and in the woods, a couple of experiences that I had in 1999 and in 2000 with cougars regarding my children. I, too, just heard about this hearing about 36 hours ago, but felt strongly and so appreciated the opportunity to come forward and hear what's happening. I didn't expect I would be up here, however. At any rate, I have a small ranch and hired a man to come and help me, a young kid actually, to help me work on my fences for my cattle and horses. And when he was out repairing a fence in broad daylight, he suddenly kind of felt chills and looked up and had a stare down with a cougar that was standing over a deer that it had recently killed, eating. And this was maybe about 20 feet away. He bent down and picked up some rocks and began throwing the rocks at it. And the cougar picked the deer up, jumped over the fence with it in his mouth, and ran off. For the next 3 years, I heard a gentleman earlier make mention of, you know, some wisdom, if I heard him right, about bringing your children in after sunset. Well, that's kind of nice, but, you know, the buses for your schools run the children, and they pick my children up before sunrise and drop them off after sunset, and my driveway is a quarter of a mile long. So for the next few years, I ran my children down the driveway because I began to notice cougar tracks all over around our property and waited for them at the bus stop in the car and picked them up in the evening. And so I think that this is clearly a problem. Nobody's asking for any kind of uncontrolled situation. What we're actually asking for is for the state to take the control back. And so I wanted to just give you my feedback on that and appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you. And you're Donald Haney?
I'm sorry, Donald Haney.
And you live where, sir?
I live in Southern Oregon.
Southern Oregon, okay.
Yes.
Thank you. Sir, welcome.
Thank you very much. My name is Garland Teich. I am a member of the Oregon Hunters Association. I've been the county commissioner or the county coordinator for the hunter education program for the last 15 years, and due to health problems, I just resigned. I have heard a lot of stories from all the students. I've put through several thousand students in my 13 years of hunter ed, and it's been very eye-opening. Now, I had never seen a cougar in the wild, even though I've spent my life hunting in fishing, probably over 50 years, maybe close to 60 years I've been doing it. Until the last few years, one cougar ran through our yard chasing the deer. By the way, we own a little tree farm out here east of here, and we used to have 8 or 10 deer in our trees just about every day. In the last 6 months, I've probably seen 3 deer, and we see them maybe once a month now, and I blame it on the cougar. We had my wife is 72 years old. She has health problems like I do, and she walks every day, and she used to. And I told her to take the dog with her. And my dogs are not very big. They're registered beagles. So a cougar would eat one in one bite. But anyway, she was walking with the dog, and the dog stopped, started pulling, started barking, and she looked over to the side of the road, and this cougar was staring her down. Well, I had told her what to do. Don't run, just keep up a steady pace. She did, and it was only 50 yards from our house. She made it home, but as a result, she wouldn't go walking anymore, so consequently, we interrupted our lifestyle because of the cougars, and we got a treadmill, so now that's what she walks on. I could go on, but I know we're short on time, so I'm going to cut it off there, and if you got any questions, I'd be glad to welcome you. I know that we have some llamas must be choice food, because we have several neighbors that raise llamas, and I heard you mention you had them. We've had 2 of them taken in the last 2 years in our neighborhood by the cougar, and it was confirmed. The ODF&W, we called on the one cougar. On the second one, we didn't. We should have. And if I'd have known this was coming up, I would have kept tracks of dates and times and persons' names and phone numbers, but I didn't. But if you want to talk to somebody who thinks llamas are very good eating, I'll get some names. Thank you.
Thank you, Garland. Sir, welcome. State your name, please, for the record.
I don't need 2 of them. I only got 1 voice. 1 vote.
I need all the help I can get.
Same with me. Mr. Chairman, I'm Eldon Deerdorf. I reside at 44256 Eagle Creek Road, Richland, Oregon. And that's over east of Baker City, I guess you understand. I'm going to give you a little bit of my background. I was born and raised on a ranch in Baker County. During my school years in the wintertime, I trapped fur-bearing animals to help the nickel back into the nickel. As you can see, the gray hair, I've been there. After high school, I hunted predators on the bounty system. The bounty, there was a bounty on bobcat, cougar, and bear up until the last day of the month in June of 1961. I was unemployed for 2 days, and I went the third day of July, I went to work for the U.S. Federal Fish and Wildlife as a federal hunter-trapper. I spent 17 years with that department. I worked North Grant County, Southern Harney County, and then transferred back into Baker County. And after that, I bought an outfitting guide business, and the last 23 years I've been operating the Cornucopia Wilderness Pack Station out of Halfway, Oregon. I work in Eagle Cap Wilderness and Hales Canyon. So at this point in time, I work with George Keister down there on a lot of his damage complaints. In fact, I've got one now that's a little embarrassing. I won't even bother you with it. But I'm here this afternoon to support House Bill 2436 on behalf of the Oregon Eastern Oregon Guides and Outfitters. We just had a meeting last Monday, and I was appointed to come down and speak with you. We greatly appreciate the opportunity to voice our industry's concerns. Number one is in the outfitting guiding, naturally the deer and the elk and the antelope and all that is really a high concern. After measure 18 went in, our herds continually went downhill and downhill, and they're still going downhill. And these herds have already been stressed, and these continued impacts, it's just harder and harder for our industry to survive, especially on this draw system. Here a few years ago, we did come through these committees, and we did get some outfitter guide tags that we would help finance the Fish and Wildlife with some of them tags that wasn't being used, and they've been helping. But as a continuation of the game animals are decreasing, it's just getting harder and harder. The numbers are going down. Another thing, livestock producers, big and small, it don't matter whether you're big or little. You can have one llama, you can have 40 head of cows, you're still getting impacted. And especially with the price of beef that we had today out here today, by golly, you can't buy it in the store for what we get from it on the hoof, I can tell you that. Local revenue, I'm going to speak a little bit on mainly Willow County. Since the introduction of Measure 18 and the continued reduction in the game animals, Willow County has lost something like over 6,000 elk tags. And you take that in a small community, which is mainly ranching, livestock, and outdoors, that's a lot of revenue. I work partly in Willow County myself in the south end of it. For example, let me get down here in some of my other notes here. I'm taking this from 1998 Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife statement. In 1980, the Snicker unit population on the elk was 4,250. That's in 1980. In 1998, it had dropped to 2,400. And since 1995, elk hags have decreased in 10 hunt units in Northeast Oregon. Some of them, basically all the antlerless hunts are absolutely gone. In Willow County from 1970 to 1998, we've had a 2/3 decline in hunters, and it's still dropping. And as of Monday, I was unable to obtain the 2002-2003 count of the elk in those units because they haven't been completed yet. On the bear and cougar damage complaints in Baker County, I have a graph here. I'm sorry I didn't have handouts for you folks. I didn't realize we needed them. But I have a graph here from cougar damage complaints in Baker County from 1991 to 1998. In 1991, there was one complaint. 1992, maybe one complaint. 93, none. 94, one. And then in 94, after Measure 18, in 95, it looks like five. In 96, probably eight. In 97, 10. In 98, we're getting up in here about 27 or 28. And that was 91 to 98. And I also have some recent ones here. These are from 10-1 of 02. These are right here, I'm talking of Baker County. We were in Keating Valley. One lion seen many times all summer, mostly between mileposts 19-22. Hound and call with no luck. Lambs were lost. Pine Creek, just west of Baker City, lost a ewe. Pine Creek, same area. Too dry. Cougar couldn't be found immediately. Trap was set at the carcass. Cougar was caught on the second night, but it pulled free. Another one, Sean White, China Creek. This is 9502. Had cougar charging while archery hunting in, on 9502. He hit the cougar with his bow, and the cougar ran off. Black Mountain. Two of them came in while his son and him was archery hunting, calling out. Two cougars come in, a large and a smaller one, likely a mother and a large kitten. One was within 12 feet of the son. Monty shot an arrow at the smaller cougar. The large cougar ran away, and the smaller one ran a short distance and stopped. Monty shot two more times, but missed. Sounds like he should have saved his bow in.
Sir, we're really running short on time. They're going to kick us out of here at 4 o'clock.
Okay.
So
right.
If you could just summarize for us.
Okay.
And I hate to rush.
We're very,
sorry.
Very much in favor of this measure. And by golly, I've had some comments here lately, and I really, it sort of tears me up. It says, like most of you, I have grandsons too, and by golly, I certainly don't want to see something like this back here. I'd rather bite the bullet and take care of it, and not have something. At least know we did something to try to eliminate the problem. And I was also instrumental with Raymond. I didn't realize they were going to be here. I was in the other room. I was the one that picked that cat up at his house. That cat had jumped at that back door 4 times.
All right.
And
good for you.
I picked that cat up for him and submitted it into the Fish and Wildlife. Because, anyway, I want to thank you for the time.
Thank you.
And by golly, we appreciate what you're doing and hanging there. Because we're behind you.
Very much. We appreciate that. It
thank
means
you.
A lot.
I would like to make one more comment. I've used hounds all my life. I started using hounds when I was about 10 years old. I've been raising black and tans. There's only one way to get a cougar, or bears, you can bait them, you can get them a lot of ways. But cougars, you gotta have those hounds. And I'd rather sell hunters a fishing license or a hunting license to hunt these animals than have to pay a biologist to go out and kill the animal. Puts more money in the kitty. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I would like to add one more thing. Being an outfitter and a guide, the harvest of these prime animals is really a trophy. And I think you'll find that if you get rid of some of these older big animals that's dominant in the areas, you're going to have less of the young coming down into your homes.
Yeah. Thank you all very much. Really do appreciate that. That's a good point, actually. We've got a couple other people that have traveled some fair distance. Al Elkins, you got a couple of folks with you that have traveled a distance. And then is it Paul Coyle? Coral? Paul, if you'd come forward also, please. Welcome to you, folks. We got about 10 minutes to finish our testimony here, and I really appreciate everyone's diligence. Thank you all for coming. This has not been a fast issue, so if you could summarize your testimony, it would be very helpful. Thanks. Please.
My name is Don Scheller. I'm with Oregon Hunters. I live in the Portland area. In the interest of time, I think you're getting part of the testimony that I've written. I'll just mention one part of it. Urban Oregonians tend to play down the potential danger that cougars present in the state, and because cougars are not a threat in their daily lives. Several years ago, a young cougar was treed in the backyard in the Gresham area. This made big news, and the local parents were concerned about the safety of their children. I've spoken with a lot of hunters who hunt in the northwest corner of the state, and they've been seeing an increased number of cougar tracks
and the cougar kills. And I predict that within the next 3 years we're going to have similar problems in the West Hills area with cougars in our backyards. The reason for this is there's a pretty good-sized elk herd running around in the Skyline Hills, which is becomes part of Forest Park. And frankly, I'm convinced that it won't be too long. These cougars are going to find these elk, and they'll be right there in our backyards in Portland. So I'll conclude with that.
Thank you.
Okay. Sir. My name is Paul Coyle. I'm an executive with a shooting sports company here in Oregon. There are more than a handful of shooting sports companies here in Oregon. We are a licensed munitions manufacturer by the BATF and regulated also by the State Department of the United States. So our business does have some legitimacy. There are 75 employees in our company who derive their living from hunting in this state. There are with the other companies in this state that support hunting as an activity, most likely thousands of people who derive their living from the activity of hunting here, and we're certainly concerned about that. I am also a father of children living on the west side of Bend. We live in Torsway Street, which is on the western limits of the city of Bend. Several years ago, our neighbor, Myrna Freshwaters, found lion tracks in her yard. This is in a developed neighborhood on the western side of town. Within the last year and a half, one of our neighbors at the end of our cul-de-sac found a young lion sleeping on their back deck. Our house is 1 mile from the new high school on the west side of Bend, Summit High School. There is a lion known to the state, the Department of Fish and Wildlife, to live in that area. That high school is within eyesight of High Lakes Grade School, where my son attends school. He has to walk to school or ride his bike every day. He does that in the accompaniment of one of any number of adults in our neighborhood. For that and other reasons. We're obviously concerned about the impact on safety. We're concerned about the impact on hunting in general. It's a great concern to us, those of us that make our living from it, that hunting be something that prosper in this state. We think that fish and wildlife professionals in this state have done a responsible job in managing our resources in the past, and we'd certainly like to return that right to them again. So.
Thank you.
My name is Steve Mathers. I'm president of the Oregon Guides and Packers Association. I'm not a hound hunter. But what I'm here to see is to have ODFW give them the ability to manage cougars again. While they were managing them prior to the bear ban, the dog ban, there were the population was increasing steadily. There was no. We would not have a lot of problems, and in certain areas where they were having, you know, they had several problems. In areas where they had problems, that they could increase the number of tags, so they could manage the control problems. Last summer, we had two guides who were out hunting and called in cougars within 20 feet, and with clients, and we considered thought they were stalking them. And the income loss to our guides and outfitters and to the Eastern Oregon economy is a tremendous amount of lost revenue.
Thank you all very much. I appreciate you coming. Bob, is it Bada?
Boda.
Bob, come forward. Rod Clawitter and David Walker. David, are you still here? He is. Very good. Thank you. Go ahead, Bob.
Chairman Krupp and members of the committee, my name is Robert Boda. I'm the executive director of the National Foundation for Wildlife. We are a conservation organization dedicated to ensuring the future of wildlife, habitat, and access. We are here to support House Bill 2436 in regards to promote the sound scientific wildlife management. In 1994, the Barren Cougar Management Ban succeeded in polarizing this issue. Without the proper tools necessary to manage bear and cougar populations, we aren't able to protect our wildlife, resources, our crops, and our families. Wildlife management should not be controlled by emotion or desperations. The bills that have been introduced in legislature to return barren cougars to predator classifications are an indication of that desperation. Without the passage of House Bill 2436, everybody loses. Please support this bill in the interest of sound wildlife management. We urge you to protect our wildlife resources and our finalists. Thank you.
Thank you. Robert, welcome. Chair Grupp, members of the committee, my name is Rod Clowder. I'm here today representing Oregon United Sporting Dog Association. We are a member of the coalition, Oregonians for Responsible Wildlife Management, that has brought this bill forward. My testimony today is going to concentrate mainly on bears because they seem to be overlooked a lot of times. In the packet that I handed out, a quick search of the web gives you some newspaper headlines from around the country. There again, in the interest of brevity, the reality of it is that black bears have killed more people in the United States and in North America than cougars by like 4-1. My experience with bears over 30 years, which includes several, and that seems to be one of those perception issues, and that is that the one thing that you can absolutely guarantee about bears, and cougars for that matter, is they'll do just whatever they want to do at any particular time they want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
There is no absolute. A lot of the economic stuff that I add here has been covered. There's been a lot of talk about predation. In the Northeast Oregon study, somewhere between 66% at least, the most recent numbers that I had were from December. That may have changed by now. Of that mortality on those elk herds over there was caused by black bears, not by cougar. In a similar study in Idaho, 37-52% of the calf mortality was caused by black bear. Actually, a study done almost 30 years ago in Idaho indicated that that number was a lot higher than that. Let's see here. I want to try and jump ahead. The budget has been mentioned. The cost of the expense of control versus management of black bear and cougar. I think you're all aware of the budget crunches. Some of that money has already gone away. Almost all of it is in jeopardy in one way or another. For the department to be able to respond to these. Included in my packet also are a couple of letters that I think went to their local representatives, but I wanted this committee to see them because they both speak volumes about the dissatisfaction of a lot of people. You've heard some of that today in the response time, the ability to respond, the effectiveness of that response when it does come. The key issue there, I would say, is the fact that I'd like you to concentrate on is that is reactive. With some of the other testimony you've heard today, sometimes reacting isn't good enough. Prevention would seem to be a prudent thing to do. In those paper headlines, as I was reading, scanning through those articles, the one child in New York that was snatched out of a stroller at, I think, 5 or 6 months old, by a black bear. A local wildlife expert made the determination that maybe everybody always looks for a reason. And his statement was maybe the bear confused the baby for food. There again, that's one of those perception things. He's assuming that the bear was confused. I'm not sure that that's an accurate assumption of the situation. One piece of rebuttal. The private landowners being able to use agents, that works for damage. When it comes to public safety, that can only be done by a paid agent of the state or federal government. That option is not allowed to private citizen. It has to be a paid agent. That recent determination from ODFW. If you have any questions, I would be happy to answer.
That's I appreciate you making that distinction. Gerald, welcome.
Representative Krupp, committee members, my name is David Walker. I'm here today representing Tillamook Oregon Hunters Association. I'm going to forego my testimony other than saying we are in favor of House Bill 2436 in the essence of time and appreciate the chance to speak.
Thanks, David. My apologies for calling you Gerald. Thank you, the three of you. Appreciate that. And speaking of Gerald, is Gerald Myra here? If you could come forward very quickly, I'd like to have Rod Harder next. And we have submitted testimony from Farm Bureau, is that correct? And also the Cattlemen's, is that correct also?
No submitted.
Okay, we'll come forward quickly.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Rod Harder. My testimony will be extremely brief. Many of the points I had have already been covered. Reiterate the recent decision by the Attorney General's office that an agent for purposes of hunting cougar and bear can only be by someone who's paid. That is not accurate statewide for other agencies. I'm not sure why it pertains to Fish and Wildlife. But it's something that we need to look into because in this budgetary climate, we can use every volunteer we can muster. I've handed a handout to you, and this will be the end of my my testimony. It's on the Wildlife Damage Council that was set up by House Bill 2409 in the last session legislature. And if you look at that, a very diverse group of folks, about 15 to 18 people that were on that from all segments of the entire state of Oregon. And the point in all that is, after much deliberation, this organization and this group, legislatively appointed, voted to support the repeal of Measure 18 with one no vote and one dissenting vote. And so that would conclude my testimony.
Thank you, Rod. Katie?
Katie Fast, Oregon Cattlemen. Just briefly, Oregon's livestock industry, as you all are aware, are being attacked by unmanageable predators. However, our industry is also being encouraged to diversify, and our members also raise cattle, hay, grain crops, and also have quite a bit of timberland. And the issue I'd like to just bring up is our members in Southwest Oregon are being hit doubly. They're being hit on the cougar end with livestock predation, but they're also being hit probably more significantly by economic damage to their timber lots. And our current wildlife laws for bear and cougar are reactive instead of preventative. We have to show the damage before we can bring in the measures to control wildlife populations. But I think the biggest concern for our members are the safety of their families. And you've heard numerous testimony better than I can give today on that. And I will conclude. Thank you.
Thank you, Katie. Gerald, welcome. If you could be brief. Thank you.
Yes, my name is Gerald Myra, Mr. Chair, committee members. I want to look back to 1994. I have my testimony here, but I have a testimony about the fact, the distorted facts, emotion, and in my opinion, the lies that they used to pass Measure 18. But after hearing Jacob's story, and if I had the testimony that I had made in 1994, all I can say is, we told you so.
Thank you, Gerald. Thanks, Greg. Very quickly, and then I'd like to have Jared come up front, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Greg Addington, Oregon Farm Bureau, and I think you have my written testimony in front of you. So I'll just refer to a couple of just quickly some numbers. They aren't perfect numbers because of the age of some of the studies, but the fact is that's a 1997 study conducted by the Oregon Ag Statistics Service found that wildlife damage to agricultural commodities was valued at $158 million.
Cool.
Now, that's all commodities, all damage, all animals. It gets much harder to pull out specifics from that. A 2000 report to the legislature from the Department of Fish and Wildlife concluded that statewide, cougars are responsible for 34% of adult cattle and 15% of calf losses attributed to predators. The percentage of adult sheep and lambs killed by cougars was 19% and 13% respectively. Again, bear damage is also a factor in the commercial timber lots, even smallwood lots. Of the 387 cougars killed in 2002, 132 were killed because they posed a threat to human safety or were causing damage. The rest of it's there. I'll let you read it. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you. We're not going to have time to do that. Is anyone here from the governor's office, please? We have a veto message from the governor on our desk. I'd like to ask Jared, since you were the proponents, your organization, of this measure, have you met with the governor's office to talk about this?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we have not been contacted by the governor's office on this bill to work on it or to trade solutions to this tremendous problem, no.
Have you requested meetings with the governor's office, for the record?
I personally have not requested a meeting. I have inquired about requesting a meeting and was told that there was no purpose or reason to have a meeting, that the governor was pretty sure he did not want to deal with this.
And I am under the impression, after having conversation with your employer, Paul Phillips, that he has requested numerous meetings as late as last Tuesday and has been unable to achieve a meeting with the governor's office on this issue. Is that correct?
I believe so, yes.
Okay. Thank you. For the record.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Regarding that issue, I just wanted to say that in the testimony from Jim Myron, the National Resource Policy Advisor to the Governor, there's absolutely no information regarding pain to citizens nor damage to crops and other natural resources. And I am of the belief that he has no concept of, you know, what has been involved in this issue. And I just think we have so many great resources here. As the good veterinarian who certainly, you know, presented us with the medical facts, as well as all of these individuals who have been in these areas, as well as the testimony in the schools. I mean, I think this is like the last man just happened, you know. What came about was what we were told would happen if we allowed this type of a wild animal to live in our neighborhood without protection for our citizens and our crops. I think a picture of Jacob and the testimony ought to be taken to him, and I encourage every individual here to contact the governor's office and tell them how serious this issue is now.
Thank you, Representative. And with that, we're going to close. I'm going to read into the testimony, into the record, testimony submitted by Jim Myron. The Governor's Natural Resource Policy Office offers the following statement for the legislature, for the legislative record on behalf of 2436 on behalf of Governor Ted Kulongoski. The Governor opposes the repeal of the Bear and Cougar Initiative, which prevents the use of bait for bear hunting and the use of dogs for bear and cougar hunting. The citizens of Oregon have voted twice on this issue, and the Governor is not interested in overturning the will of the people. That being said, if there are any remaining unresolved issues related to public safety that have not already been addressed through previous legislation, Governor Kulongoski would encourage that discussion and would support resolving those issues. Thank you for the opportunity to get this statement into the record. For the record, we're going to close a public hearing on House Bill 2436 and open a work session on House Bill 2436. The chair would entertain a motion. Representative Nelson.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I move House Bill 2436 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
It has been so moved. Discussion?
I think, Mr. Chair, I would just comment, I think based on the testimony today, it's abundantly clear, even more clear to all of us, that there is a huge problem with cougars, and much of that is a public safety problem. My concern would be, is the best way to deal with the cougar issue a full repeal of Measure 18? I think our colleague Senator Fisher said it well, that we need to make progress in that direction. And as we've heard, I think 99% of the testimony has been related to cougars, and I think we can, and I personally would be very supportive of an effort to take cougars out of this statute. And as I'll note later, I'll give intent to file a minority report to that answer.
Representative Smith?
Thank you, Chair Krupp. I just want to put on the record that I don't usually vote against ballot measures. It's just kind of one of the things that I don't do. I believe the will of the people. But this has been since 1996, and obviously there's been much testimony today that would preclude us, and I do not want to be responsible for this ever in this state. So I will be voting yes.
Thank you. Representative Beyer.
Yes, I want to go on record here, too. I tend to agree pretty much with what Representative Hunt has said. I certainly agree that we have a problem with Cougars. I've pretty much felt that way all along. I'm not as convinced with the Bears, and I'm not so sure about an outright appeal. My preference would be to try to work something out on this issue so that we could actually work towards solving the problem we have, because I don't see this as a solution. I don't see this going through the whole process. So, again, I also, along with Representative Hunt, will be supporting minority report.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Nelson.
As a representative of my constituents and the residents of Oregon, my first and top priority is your safety. Whether you're, you know, 1 year old or younger or way over 100. And I think when a state avoids taking on the serious issue, even in a position like this, when we refuse to protect the people, then we are seriously remiss in taking on our responsibility and are accountable. And when we think of the instances of schools where we've had gun-bearing students, we've immediately, you know, rose to the issue to protect those school kids. Now, we just heard from one individual the vast risk of these predators with our children. I hate to think of a senior elderly couple living on the farm for their lifetime and facing a, you know, 1,000-pound black bear. I mean, the concept is beyond comprehension. I don't even know if they weigh that much, but they appear to be pretty darn big. All I'm saying is that is our top priority, and regardless, I think the people would want to know that we've cared enough to protect them in this case, and we should do so.
Okay, thank you. No further comments. The chair would like to also agree with Representative Smith. I also take a very dim view of overturning the will of the people, but when it comes to choosing the will of the people over human life, I'm going to side with human life and public safety every time, and I think it's been very clear, and that young man right there and the other young man from halfway are clear examples of why we're here today to make this decision. So with that, clerk, call the roll, please.
Representative Smith.
Aye.
Representative Nelson?
Aye.
Representative Hunt?
No.
Representative Beyer?
No.
Representative Worth?
That's what I thought. Pardon?
Representative Worth.
Representative Worth is excused.
Representative Gilman?
Aye.
Chair Krupp?
Aye. House Bill 2436 is hereby passed to the floor. It's hereby passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. The chair recognizes Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just give notice of intent to file a minority report.
Thank you very much. And the chair would like to state for the record that the opportunity will clearly exist should this pass the House floor for further work on this bill on the Senate side, and would expect that that would probably occur. And with that, House Bill 2436 hereby passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Beyer, yes, you have a comment.
I would like to join Representative Hunt in filing a minority report.
Okay, thank you both very much. I appreciate it. We are concluded. The carrier will be me, the chair. Thank you all very much.
Close the hearing.
I'm going to close the public hearing.
Close the sound.
You know, I-